Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be here with you for the entire 3 hours of The Alex Jones Show. And then Matt Bracken will take over for me at the 2 o'clock hour, but I will be joined by a couple of great guests this show as I fill in for Alex Jones. This will be the last day that I am filling in. He will return tomorrow, and I'd be surprised if we didn't hear from him during the show today. Obviously, this weekend, it was a very confusing one when it comes to the Iran war. That is going to be, again, of course, the main topic of our conversation, although that's not the only thing that's happened around the world. There's also some pretty surprising election results in France and Germany as the right-wing parties took some major victories there. But we'll see if they're even allowed to run their own countries. After all, our democracy is not really the most accurate way to label those countries. And we've seen time and time again how whenever the right wing gets a leg up over the left wing and the more conservatives or the more centrist conservative parties tend to get together and block the far right from achieving anything ever. But when it comes to the Iran war, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you because everything keeps changing. And by the time you hear about one announcement, it turns out it's been reversed and denied, and it's all ridiculous. And I think this section from a article from no01.substack.com, it's called March 19th through 21st, God is a Comedian. And it lays out, gives the timeline for Friday's press conference. And the entire weekend has basically been like this. Friday's press gaggle, barely exaggerated. At 12.03 p.m., President Trump told reporters he wanted a ceasefire with Iran. At 12.05, he declared victory. At 12.07, he announced he was sending Marines. At 12.08, he said no boots on the ground. At 12.11, he said he did not want a ceasefire. At 12.16, he declared victory again. At 12.17, he asked for a ceasefire. At 12.23, he told NATO they were cowards. At 12.29, he said Iran was begging for a ceasefire. At 12.31, he said everything was perfect. At 12.37, he said $500 oil was a good thing. At 12.37, he demanded Iran open Hormuz. At 12.39, he said Hormuz was never closed. And at 12.41, he said the U.S. was not at war with Iran. At 12.42, he declared a victory once again. Again, not actually all that exaggerated, and that really is what we're dealing with here. Okay, so expand this, you know, 5-minute segment of a single press conference out over a weekend, and that's basically where we are. So, as of yesterday, President Trump put down a 48-hour ultimatum for Iran, saying, open up the Strait of Hormuz or we're going to attack your energy infrastructure. Then he backed off of that and said, we're not going to hit the infrastructure. Now he's saying that they're in talks, peace talks with Iran, ceasefire talks with Iran. But Iran completely denies it and says it's not happening. So, you know, this is what happens, I guess, when you're in an empire of lies where everybody is lying about everything all of the time. We have absolutely nothing to go on. What we do know happened over the weekend is that Iran struck the Dimona nuclear area, which in and of itself is a little bit difficult for Israelis to deal with, considering the fact that they've never publicly acknowledged that they have a nuclear program and nuclear weapons. So that whole facade is sort of not happening anymore, where they go, they hit Dimona, where our where something special is. We can't tell you why, but it's really bad they hit Dimona. It's really bad and dangerous that they hit Dimona. Don't ask why. It doesn't matter why. Just they really shouldn't hit Dimona. So we're sort of done pretending. The world is done pretending. Like, we don't know Israel has an illegal nuclear weapon system. But Iran is clearly not knocked out of the fight. They're hitting Israel more than they ever have before. Trump says there's a ceasefire, but there's not. He says they're talking to Iranians, but Iranians say that's not happening. We'll try to figure out what's actually going on. We'll get our finger on the pulse here one way or the other and tell you what's really happening with the war in Iran. And it's not going well, folks. In a word, it's not going well. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big Panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue T-shirt, and more. Take advantage of that right now at theauctionstore.com.
You found it, the tip of the spear. It is the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this frontline report about World War III, World War IV, whatever you want to call it. Certainly the historians will recognize what the mainstream media is refusing to acknowledge, that this is full-on World War III, full-on World War, and it's all being done on purpose, by design, and with the intended consequence of destroying America and installing a one-world government once and for all. That really, we are here in the final battle. This is it. And it's being waged, of course, with your traditional weapons of war, your missiles and fighter jets and bullets. But to an even greater degree, it's being waged with words and ideas and information. And one of their main strategies, it seems, is muddying the waters and providing a sort of overabundance of information so that we can't figure out what the hell's going on one way or the other. And again, this might be deliberate. It might be just consequence of actually chaotic and disorganized leadership at the top. The upshot is, it's hard for me to present to you with any degree of confidence the actual facts on the ground of what's going on in Iran and the decisions being made in Washington, D.C. I mean, everything is flip-flopping like a damn pancake, and we are going to do our best to, you know, figure out what's actually happening here. But again, when everybody is lying on every side, and when, you know, the facts on the ground point to a completely different conclusion, we'll have to just do our best. Now, I'm going to be helped in this with some very impressive characters coming on later in the show. Brandon Weichert will be joining me, as well as Anthony Rubin from Muckraker. He'll be joining me as well to talk about not only legal immigration and all of the other things that are destroying America from the inside, but also the incredible undercover investigations going on in California showing the fairly open and all but acknowledged voter fraud taking place there with the homeless population. Very excited to talk to him. And just on that note, I don't want to go on too long about this, because both of these guys, like so many people that we talk about and interact with here on InfoWars, are incredibly talented, and I no way want to take away from the incredible success that they have and especially are enjoying right now in this moment. But I do want to pat ourselves on the back, and maybe I'll ask them just to make sure. But I'm fairly certain we were the first people ever to have Anthony Rubin on. I'm pretty sure InfoWars was the first outlet ever to help try to elevate what Muckraker was doing as they were investigating the illegal immigrant inflow to America and actually hopping on trains and crossing from Mexico. You know, we had them on very early on and just loved what they were doing. They were very much the real deal, taking great risks and producing great reports. So we wanted to have them on. And of course, now they've gone on to really become a force in their own right, a very powerful, you know, force rivaling any other right-wing content engines at this point. Same with Brandon Weichert. We've had Brandon Weichert on the entire time I've done First American Journal, now War Room. He is a great international analyst for certainly the military side of things. And it's been great because over the last month or so, I've seen him absolutely everywhere. I mean, his profile has absolutely exploded, and for good reason, because he's extremely talented and extremely knowledgeable and extremely good at predicting what's going to happen next in the theater of war. So I'm not taking credit for these guys at all, but I do want to emphasize that this is a key role that InfoWars has played for the last several decades. It's not just Alex Jones, obviously. He's the kingpin, he's the man, he's the king of the castle, and we wouldn't exist without him. But the entire time he's done what he's done, he's encouraged other people to do it as well, and has always been there to be a platform for people coming up to expose them to a wider audience, to get more eyes on their information so they can grow and they can start making money and they can support themselves doing this. And they can become a force to be reckoned with, like InfoWars has become a force to be reckoned with. This has always been a key component of the InfoWars game plan. And you can see the success that it's having on a daily basis now when Brandon Weikert is on with Steve Bannon or Newsmax or like any of these places. They all start at InfoWars. Of course, I could just go through the litany of just like from Paul Joseph Watson to Savannah Hernandez to Owen Schroyer. It's like InfoWars has just been this generator. It's like a magical, I don't know, you know, it's like the video game door where all the bad guys come out of. We just are constantly spawning new champions, new warriors, new patriots onto the battlefield who then go on to do great and incredible things. So again, that's not us. These people are incredibly talented. They couldn't do it. You know, it wouldn't work if we just were putting up a bunch of scumbag, no talent losers. We wouldn't go very far. But no, we constantly serve as this launch pad for the most talented, the most hardcore, the most impressive independent investigators America has ever seen. And you are responsible for that, right? We don't do anything without you. We can't do anything without you. We need your support at InfoWars. And it's not just about InfoWars. It's about this engine of prosperity and populist political dogma that we have become the generator of. And I'm just like honored and it's great. I don't know. It's a funny feeling, you know, somebody that like we'll have somebody on the show over and over and just like, man, this guy's so good. Like, how does nobody else, like, why are we the only ones that have him on? We have him on and on and on and on. And then all of a sudden they break through and they just absolutely explode and become who they should have been the whole time. Alex Stein's another one. We used to have Alex Stein call into American Journal as a prank caller, and he would pretend to be a leftist and talk about how he was mad that he, you know, his illegal immigrant maids kept dying because he kept forcing them to get the COVID vax. And it was hysterical. And he would play it straight and it would be hilarious. And nobody would be like, is this guy real? Is this not real? Nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew who he was. Now everybody knows who Alex Stein, primetime pimp on a blimp. Everybody knows who he is. He's become a legend in the, you know, in the sphere, in the right wing sphere. And for so long, we were like, man, this guy's so funny. How does nobody get how good this Alex Stein guy is? And then all of a sudden they break through. So there's always that point where they break through and then explode. But for so long, InfoWars is sort of the incubator of these people. So again, it's like, this is what you're supporting when you support InfoWars. This is what you're helping to, like, you're helping to grease the engine that produces all of these incredible warriors of information and patriots and Americans and just freedom loving good people all around who are taking a sledgehammer to the lies that uphold the empire that's crushing us. And I do want you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. Again, it's not just about Alex Jones. It's not just about InfoWars. It's not just about this incredible crew, the best in the business, all three really just knock everybody else out of the park. And by the way, I'm sorry, I'll get back to the news, but I could just go on and on about it because I know people in these other big media companies, the people that you might think are analogous, you know, organizations you might think are analogous to InfoWars, they don't work, folks. They do like one show. Everybody at InfoWars works our butt off 24 hours a day, 7 days a week because we love this country and we love humanity and we want to see everybody freed from the grips of the inhuman, satanic globalist pedophiles that run everything. But again, it's just, we work hard, folks. We work really, really hard because we recognize that you work hard as well. And we appreciate when you support us and we want to make your investment in us worth it because really it's an investment in yourself. 30% off site wide right now at thealexjonesstore.com. That sale ends tonight at midnight. You don't need a code. You don't need to enter anything in. Just absolutely everything in the store. 30% off right now, thealexjonesstore.com. This is also your final week to enter to win both the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500, an incredible car, and the 2025 Ford Raptor, plus $20,000 in cash. Every $1 you spend gets 100 times entries to win both. Somebody's got to win these cars. It might as well be you. The way you win is go to thealexjonesstore.com, make a purchase, and every dollar you spend gets 100 time entries to win both of these cars. Iodine, of course, is back on sale at thealexjonesstore.com. It's 50% off for VIPs. And, of course, like everything else on the site, it's 30% off today and today only, thealexjonesstore.com. All right, with that, let's get into the developments in Iran over the weekend. Trump administration doubles U.S. ground troops headed to the Persian Gulf. Trump administration has doubled the number of U.S. ground troops deploying to the Middle East for the war with Iran, sending an additional 2,500 Marines and three warships from San Diego. An official with knowledge of the matter told MS Now. The deployment was first reported by the Associated Press. The USS Boxer and two other amphibious assault ships have departed San Diego along with the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, which includes 2,500 Marines, the U.S. official said. Last week, the administration ordered three other warships and a Marine Expeditionary Unit with roughly 2,500 Marines to deploy from Japan. A lot of people, of course, think that this is going to be an invasion into Karg Island, which seems to be the intention being telegraphed, but that would, according to everybody who knows anything about military operations, would inevitably result in a Gallipoli-like stalemate quagmire situation. So I'm thinking it might be more likely that they end up being deployed to somewhere like Lebanon to deal with Hezbollah, since Israel is trying to mount a massive invasion into their neighboring state and do not have the manpower to carry out such a adventure. Not with the resistance that they're facing that we'll get to in just a second. But I think if I had to put my money on where the Marines were being sent, I think it's more likely they're being sent to Lebanon. Although if we're going by the past decision-making pattern of the United States government, maybe they would actually go to the place that it would be worse for them to be. Maybe actually, if I'm going by the past behavior of the U.S. government, maybe I shouldn't be expecting them to go to the place where they would actually be useful, and instead they're being sent to a place where they are inevitably going to die, to fail to achieve their mission, and to, of course, precipitate a much, much larger invasion of American boots on the ground. So who's to say, you know, if we were run by regular people with normal prerogatives and priorities, then they would probably be going to Lebanon, but we're being run by satanic, suicidal madmen that are trying desperately to get this war into World War III territory as vociferously, as angrily and as stupidly as possible. Iran vows to destroy Middle East water and energy facilities if U.S. attacks power plants. Tehran's response to Trump's threat signals a potentially dangerous escalation as both sides' menace sites relied on by millions. Tehran has said it will irreversibly destroy essential infrastructure across the Middle East, including vital water systems, if the U.S. follows through on Donald Trump's threat to obliterate Iran's power plants unless the Strait of Hormuz is fully opened within 2 days. As Iranian missiles struck two southern Israeli cities overnight, injuring dozens of people, and Tehran deployed long-range missiles for the first time, the development signaled a dangerous potential escalation of the war, now in its fourth week, with both sides threatening facilities relied on by millions of people. So again, we're almost into Dune territories where they actually are threatening to essentially blow up the entire world, certainly blow up the entire region and destroy oil production in totality for a very long time still to come. Now, it looks like Trump has backed off of his 48-hour demand, and he's claiming that Iran is begging for negotiations. I have my doubts about this, to be honest with you, because it seems like Trump just sort of says things. And this has been a problem since this latest iteration of the Iran conflict, is every time before, Trump would, he'd be a little loosey-goosey with the way he said things. He would never, like, solidly stick to a statement. It would always be like, well, maybe we will, maybe we won't, maybe we'll do this, maybe we won't. And you could always sort of tell what was really happening. If you studied this stuff, if you looked into what Trump's real motivation was, it was never that difficult to ascertain, okay, this is what's actually happening. That's not the case anymore. Now, I don't know if he knows what's happening. I don't know if his advisors know what's happening. I think everybody is completely out to sea on this. I don't think this is a sophisticated, you know, illusion where they're pretending to be completely insane and retarded, but I just think it's real. I just think it's actually, they actually have no idea what the hell is going on, and Trump is actually changing what he's saying over and over again with no discernible reason to it. Let's go to clip 28 here. This is Trump earlier today saying that Israel will be very happy with Iran's ceasefire, which is surprising because minutes after Trump said that he wouldn't be attacking the electric, you know, generation plants in Iran, Israel did just that. So time again, Trump is being made a fool of by Israel. Trump comes out and says, we're not letting them annex the West Bank. Well, ever since he said that, there has been a constant stream of American / Israeli settlers into the West Bank, murdering everybody, absolutely annexing it, blocking off the roads, burning the people alive in their homes. So that would be one example. And then like time and time again, of course, the getting into the Iran war at all, obviously, was the fault of Israel. Israel pushing us to do this, again, making Trump and his entire administration look like absolute bumbling, incompetent fools that made literally the worst decision anybody has ever made in all of history. This war in Iran, I genuinely think it's up there, folks, with the worst decisions ever made by anyone ever. He made it look like a fool again. Just time and time again, Trump comes out, makes an announcement, says, we're not doing this and I'm not going to let Israel do this. Israel does it anyway, makes us look like fools, makes the whole situation that less tenable, that more conflicted and impossible. And then Trump just takes credit for it and says, actually, that was totally me the whole time. That wasn't Israel betraying us and making me look like an idiot. That was me tricking Israel. And it's like, dude, you got to get it. Whatever this ego thing is, this ego trip that you're on, like, you got to get over it. It's fine. You got fooled. You got tricked. Israel basically runs you like a dog, like you're on a leash, like a dog. We get that. It's fine. You have to stop being like that. You have to stop being their willful bitch. And then you won't have to be embarrassed about it so often. That's my advice for Trump. Here's Trump earlier today, trying to pretend like he's not being led around by the nose by Israel and being betrayed constantly and not doing anything about it. Let's watch.
These talks go well and you reach a ceasefire agreement with Iran. Do you believe Israel would abide by that agreement?
I think Israel will be very happy with what we have. We just spoke to Israel a little while ago. I think they'll be very happy. This will be peace for Israel, long-term peace, guaranteed peace. If this happens, and you know, I can't guarantee it, but I think it's going to. My life is a deal. That's all I do is deals my whole life. I think this is something that's going to happen. And why wouldn't it happen? So tomorrow morning sometime, their time, we were expected to blow up their largest electric generating plants that cost over $10 billion to build. It's a very good one. There was no dearth of money. And one shot, it's gone. It collapses. Why would they want that? So they called. I didn't call. They called. They want to make a deal. And we are very willing to make a deal. It's got to be a good deal. And it's got to be no more wars, no more nuclear weapons. They're not going to have nuclear weapons anymore. They're agreeing to that. Any of that stuff, there's no deal.
So again, there's Trump claiming that Iran called him. He's asked if Israel will stick to the deal. And his response is, Israel will be very happy with the deal. Of course, that wasn't really the question. See, we don't actually need Israel's permission to make a deal. See, I think the way Trump interpreted that question was like, will Israel let you make this deal? And he's like, Israel will be very happy with the deal. They'll let us make it. It's like, that's not actually the question. The question is, if you make a peace deal, does America have the capability to restrain Israel from breaking that peace deal? And the answer to that, of course, is no, because we've seen that demonstrated time and time again. Trump does not have he doesn't have the will to stop Israel from doing whatever the hell they want and making everything impossible for us. So that's the answer to that question. Let's go now to clip 27. This is Trump being asked again about why he's saying that Iran is begging for a deal and that they're talking and negotiating when, according to Iran themselves, they haven't talked at all. Let's watch.
Mr. President, Iran's foreign ministry says you're not telling the truth when it comes to productive conversations to end the war.
Well, they're going to have to get themselves better public relations people. We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces. They're unable to talk to each other. But we've had very strong talks. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner had them. They went, I would say, perfectly. I would say that if they carry through with that, it'll end that that problem, that conflict, and I think it'll end it very, very substantially. We have very much in mind our partners in the Middle East. We've had great relationships with a lot of them, as you know. A lot of them were surprisingly hit, and I was surprised to see it, and so was everyone else. But we have, they're very much in mind in the discussions. So the discussions took place yesterday. They went into yesterday evening. They want very much to make a deal. We'd like to make a deal, too.
I don't believe him. I just don't believe him. I believe the Iranians. The Iranians have lied to me less than the Trump administration has about this conflict in particular. Here's the problem. Because of Israel and America's behavior in the past couple of years, really the last couple of decades, but specifically the last couple of years and really, really specifically the last couple of months, they've made it impossible for this war to end in anything other than the absolute victory of Iran or the absolute victory of America and Israel. Now, the absolute victory for America and Israel would be that Iran is just a straight up failed state. So in that way, there is no victory for that, because the victory conditions for us, for America and Israel, is a state of permanent warfare in which you have an endless battlefield of various factions vying for control of this state that we deliberately obliterated their infrastructure, their control systems, their ability to feed themselves. Like, so victory in the eyes of Israel and America is not really victory. It's just the condition for endless low-level warfare in Iran forever, like Syria or Iraq has been for the last 15, 20 years. For Iran, their victory conditions are that America and Israel are degraded to a point that we cannot do this again. They have no incentive to talk to us, because every time we've tried to have negotiations with Iran, we have ended up betraying them and bombing them when it looked as though we were on the cusp of agreement. Every time they try to deal with us, we backstab them. They're not trying to deal with us anymore. They can't trust a ceasefire because we don't hold Israel to ceasefires. Israel has killed thousands of people in Lebanon and thousands of people in Gaza, both happening during a time in which there was supposed to be a ceasefire that America brokered. Israel breaks it. Nothing happens to them. Why would Iran think they would be any different? And the future that they can look forward to, should they not deal a truly devastating blow to America and Israel, is basically the existence Syria enjoys right now. Israel says it hit Syrian government targets after attacks on Druze civilians. This is from March 20th. So on Friday, the Israeli military was bombing sites in the Syrian capital. Of course, Syria didn't do anything about it because they can't, because that's the state that they want all of Israel's neighbors in a state of abject subjugation in which Israel can, on a whim and for no particular reason, bomb the hell out of your capital city, kill your, you know, highest level government employees or just random citizens of yours, and you can't do anything about it. You just have to take it. That's the case for Lebanon. That's the case for Syria. That's the case, of course, for Gaza. It's the case for Iraq, for that matter. It's not the case for Iran, because they actually have the ability to hit back, so they can't be routinely bombed to smithereens by Israel and just have to take it. But that would be the future they'd look forward to. That's the condition that America and Israel has set for them. So they're not going to make a deal because we, America and Israel, have incentivized them to fight to the end. That's how stupid our leadership truly is.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Our RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity. The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain's switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. It is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com. Our medical-grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a one-month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexjonesstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom. We have a new product in at thealexjonesstore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity with no letdown and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, it can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, at thealexjonesstore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this and then looking at how they're organically derived and how each ingredient itself is a game changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Now, back to our program.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
You thought the leaden winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
Broadcasting live from the UN stronghold, Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show. And the
colors of the sea. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We'll be joined in the next hour by Anthony Rubin from Muckraker, and then at 1 o'clock we'll be joined by Brandon Weikert to break down the latest in the Iran war. That is our topic of conversation, and just going over the stories from this weekend, so much has happened. I forgot a lot of what happened over the weekend. So over the weekend, you had an Iranian missile attack against towns outside of Tel Aviv and around Dimona, where Israel's not-so-secret nuclear program has been. This was a major escalation. You actually saw a lot of Israeli civilians dying. Now, this is being admitted. Now, up until now, Israel has made it illegal to tell anybody about the effects of the Iranian missiles on Israel. You can't show images. You can't just nothing. No information is coming out. Now, all of a sudden this weekend, not only are they showing the devastation of Tel Aviv and these, you know, small villages surrounding, but they're calling it war crimes. They're going to the UN and demanding some sort of injunction against Iran for using illegal munitions, which really... Really? You guys are going to the UN. The Israel is now going to the UN and begging them to stop Iran's targeting of civilians. Really, you're going with that, are you? That's interesting. I don't think I need to explain why, but that was a major development, right? Hitting Dimona and hitting these small towns was a major development. You also had, of course, the strikes on energy infrastructure over the weekend. You also have a claim from a UN expert claiming Israel is using, quote, systematic torture against its prisoners that have never been given a chance to defend themselves or a court case of any sort. Israel, of course, bombed the Syrian capital over the weekend, which, of course, again, is just a reminder of, like, that is Iran's fate. Should they lose this war, is just being subject to periodic terror bombing by Israel forever. They call it mowing the grass, right? They did it in Lebanon. They did it in Gaza. They did it basically everywhere their enemies are that are so weak that they can't defend themselves. And they can't respond, right? Trump-Israel dispute raises questions about the chain of command. I mean, I don't know. Everything is completely upside down these days. I mean, Trump is basically insinuating and hinting. He's like, I could solve this all in 2 minutes. It's like, okay, with a nuclear bomb, we get it. It's not that impressive. Or what? Or any of the other secret weapons that we have, like the rods from God, the titanium rods in space that can deliver the, you know, damage of a nuclear bomb without any lingering radiation. Like, we know about all of the secret weapons. We know about the space lasers. Like, all these things have always been real. So, yes, you could deploy some, you know, disgusting new horror crime against humanity and kill a million civilians. That would be, you could do it. You could do it. I mean, it would work for sure. It's just why, for what, and just don't do that. How about we just don't do that? Okay. It gets crazier. It's been admitted now that fully the rebellion in Iran was completely astroturfed and entirely sponsored and fostered and created by Israel. U.S. won't strike Iran's power plant for 5 days, Trump says, in a turnaround on the Strait of Hormuz deadline. So that's from about 10 minutes before the show started. So just everything's changing. Everything's, you know, constantly shuffling around. This is not because we're winning, right? This isn't because we're just doing so good. We just keep having to change the plan to take advantage of all the success that we're having. No, it's not looking good. In a word, it's not looking good. This is from the New York Times. Israel thought it could spur rebellion inside Iran. That hasn't happened. Saw somebody online go, yeah, the good news is it spurred rebellion in America against Israel, taking us to war in Iran for their own ends. Within days of the war's beginning, said David Barnea, the Mossad chief, his service would likely be able to galvanize the Iranian opposition, igniting riots and other acts of rebellion that could even lead to the collapse of Iran's government. Mr. Barnea also presented the proposal to senior Trump administration officials during a visit to Washington in mid-January. Mr. Netanyahu adopted the plan, despite doubts about its viability among senior American officials and some officials in other Israeli intelligence agencies. Both he and President Trump seemed to embrace the optimistic outlook. Killing Iran's leaders at the outset of the conflict, followed by a series of intelligence operations intended to encourage regime change, they thought, would lead to mass uprising that might bring about a swift end to the war. Take over your government, it will be yours to take, Mr. Trump told Iranians from his initial address at the war's start, saying that they should first seek shelter from the bombing. Yes, now that we've killed your children, rise up and fight for us. What? Why would they do this? What? And again, it's just like everything else when it comes to the Iran war, they're being deliberately stupid. They aren't that stupid. They know this wasn't ever going to happen. It was on purpose. They don't want a strong Iran. They don't want a bunch of Iranian, you know, rebels rising up and taking over. They want it destroyed completely. They want it to be another Syria, another Iraq. Sure, it is a, you know, thriving nation of 90 million people who don't deserve to have their lives utterly destroyed and their ancient civilization ground to dust. But the other option was to demand that Israel sort of scale back a little bit on its military activity, and that's just unacceptable. We cannot do that. We cannot possibly ask Israel to stop, you know, using AI murder machines to target starving children. That we can't do that. So instead, we're destroying the Persian culture entirely. These are the decisions being made. These are the choices being made by our leadership, and by our, of course, I mean Israel's. 3 weeks into the war, an Iranian uprising has not yet materialized. I'm sure it'll happen any day now. American and Israeli intelligence assessments have concluded that the theocratic Iranian government is weakened but intact, and that widespread fear of Iran's military and police forces has dampened prospects for both nascent rebellion in the country and for ethnic militias outside of Iran to launch cross-border incursions. No, obviously it's not happening. And the funniest thing about this, and it's not funny because we're talking about mass death, but the ironic thing about this is, of course, that you have Pete Hegseth and others. In fact, see if the crew can find it. I didn't pull it in, but there's a video from this weekend of Pete Hegseth saying, our enemy is Islam. Because they see this as a religious war. Because, see, we are being sent to, our young men are being sent to die in Iran to bring about the false Messiah, Antichrist, so that, you know, the fake Jews can bring about the Book of Revelations. Like, that's what we're doing this for. We keep saying that this is some sort of religious war that we're waging, and you have Pete Hegseth and others saying that we're completely against Islam, that this is a, you know, a crusade against Islam. And this falls perfectly in line with the framing technique that's being deployed right now to try to portray everything as being two sides. One side is the Judeo-Christian side that loves freedom and the West and classic Americana, and then you have the Islamo-fascist, communist, left-wing coalition. To some degree, to a certain amount, you could divide these lines to some degree. The reality is that there are three positions. There's the Jewish-Israeli position that says that they need to bring about their Messiah by starting an apocalypse and nuking Damascus or whatever the Scofield Bible tricks people into believing. And then you also have the Islamic side of things, and that side isn't actually aligned with the left. The left is just stupid enough to use them as a battering ram. The left has just been indoctrinated into anti-white hatred to such a degree, by that first category, by the way, that they see the just absolute fascistic, misogynistic terror swarm of Muslims as some sort of, you know, upgrade benefit because they will fight the evil white men who just, like, haven't done anything wrong. So there it is. News alert. Pete Hegseth is reported as saying, whether Sunni or Shia, our enemy is Islam. Let's go ahead and watch. Let's watch him say this, because you just keep in mind, just put yourself in the mindset of an Iranian dissident or a Kurdish militia member or anybody else that Israel and America thinks will be the boots on the ground fighting force overthrowing the Iranian government. You think you're going to be fighting very hard when you hear Pete Hegseth and others say that actually our war is against you? Like, do they ever think about any of this? Let's watch.
In Afghanistan, name the Islamist enemy, whether they are Sunni or Shia, because this is a Shia regime, Sunni or Shia, and Iran's been willing to harbor them, as long as that group is willing to try to kill Americans. So the enemy of their enemy has been their friend as well in the Islamist world. So Iran, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's around the world, has been targeting Americans. And what they wanted in this context, and what President Trump would not tolerate, is a regime of that nature being closer and closer to nuclear capabilities.
Okay. So, like, you tell me what the thinking is here. We're trying to get Muslims to overthrow Iran, even though Iran had a leader that was, he wasn't moderate by any means, but he certainly wasn't the antagonist or aggressor for the entire time that he was in charge. You know, Iran wasn't launching attacks on Israel for no reason over and over again. Hegseth invokes divine purpose to justify military might. Well, divine purpose or diabolical stupidity. It's one of those. So the Iran uprising has not yet materialized. Well, it's because all of the people that would be fighting for us are Muslim, and you keep telling them that we're actually at war with all Muslims, which is a little bit absurd anyway. We talked about last week the Orwellian aspect of the fact that they now say Iran is responsible for all of the terror in the last 47 years. All of it. If there's ever been a terrorist attack, it was always Iran. even the terrorist attacks that we used as justification to go into Iraq and Afghanistan, those now retroactively now apply to Iran instead. Okay, totally Orwellian, totally we are always at war with East Asia type vibe coming out from that. Interestingly, from Stephen McIntyre at Climate Audit, according to the State Department's own documentation in their 2022 report on global terrorism, none of the top 10 terrorist groups ranked by fatalities were connected to Iran at all. However, there is evidence that some of them, maybe all of them, had received funding or weapons from Israel or the U.S. through the USAID or CIA. So the top perpetrators for the time period between 2018 and 2022 were ISIS, DRC, Al-Shabaab, ISIS, ISIS-GC, Boko Haram, ISIS-WA, Al-Nusrat, Islam Wal Muslimim, JNIM, ISIS-M, ISIS-K, ISIS-SP. Now, ISIS, of course, was the force that CIA and Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama created to try to overthrow Syria using exactly the same strategy that didn't work in Iran, right? One of the things about this failing in Iran and them admitting that this was their desire in Iran and that it didn't work out is that you can see how it does work out in a place like Syria. They did get the more extremist, Wahhabiist, Saudi Arabian-style radical Muslim terrorists to be their boots on the ground to overthrow the Bashar al-Assad regime so it could be replaced by a radical in al-Jalani. So this is all in response to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent saying Iran is the head of the snake for global terror, and through President Trump's Operation Epic Fury, we're winning this critical fight at an even faster pace than anticipated in response to Iran's terrorist attacks against global infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. So 2018, 2022, the top 10 terrorist organizations did not get funding from Iran. They got funding from us, from America, from USAID, from Israel. You know, ISIS has only attacked Israel one time. It was an accident and they immediately apologized. And that Israel is on record sending ambulances into the battlefield in Syria, bringing ISIS fighters into Israel for medical care before sending them back into Syria. So ISIS is Israel, essentially. It's their foot soldiers. And you could see throughout the last 15 years of the Syrian civil war, time and time again, you would have American airstrikes taking place right as ISIS is about to invade. We are basically their air force. They are our boots on the ground. So if you want to talk about the last 10 years of terror, it's us, actually. It's us and our proxies, places like ISIS, who, and the only people fighting back against them are, of course, Hezbollah and Bashar al-Assad and Iran. It's the Iranian proxies that were fighting against the ISIS terrorists that America funded and armed. Okay, that's the truth about it. And again, and this is live right now. All right, we'll go to this in just a second. If you can pause it, I would like to see what he's saying about it. But I want to emphasize something. Over this weekend, Iran proved incontrovertibly it has the ability to mess up Israel. It always has, and has for a while at least. And yet this weekend they hit Dimona, they hit Tel Aviv a lot, big cluster bombs. It's being admitted now, like it's to the point where they can't hide it anymore. So now Israel is trying to, you know, invoke the UN Charter and claiming that it's a crime against humanity and a war crime to be using the type of munitions they're using. It's particularly interesting. We can go to clip number 13 here. I'll just go ahead and play it as B-roll. This is the Israeli ambassador last year at the UN, on the UN floor, during a speech, actually shredding the UN Charter. So, you know, well, you're gonna claim that you need to be protected under the UN Charter, the one that you very publicly shredded with a tiny shredder. Where did you even get such a tiny shredder? You probably jump forward a little bit. We got to see this guy. He has a little miniaturized version of the UN Charter, and he feeds it into a little paper shredder right there on the stage of the UN. Now, these people are going to come back a year later and say, why isn't the UN helping us? Why isn't the UN stopping Big Bad Iran from using these illegal munitions? It's like, well, why wouldn't they? You have made your bed. You get to lie in it now. The problem is, somebody showed, you know, there's a video of a bunch of the destruction in Tel Aviv over the weekend, and somebody commented on it saying, do Israelis get it now? Do they understand that what they're experiencing that has them crying and pooping themselves in the you know, bunkers underground. Do they realize this is 1% of 1% of what they themselves have done to Gaza? Do they understand that this is a direct consequence of their cold-hearted bloodthirstiness when it comes to Gaza? Of course, my response is it's the exact opposite. There is a particular psychological paradigm at work where the Israelis refuse to ever acknowledge anything they may have done to precipitate the attacks against them. It, in fact, only reaffirms what they were saying the entire time in their mind. They've spent the last several years bombing Iranian civilians, just antagonizing Iran constantly, slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Gazans, almost all of them innocents, women and children. And then when Iran finally, after just endless provocation, finally hits them back, their response isn't going to be, oh gosh, maybe we shouldn't have been such murderous jackasses before. Their response is, see, we told you Iran hated us. We told you Iran was bad. We told you Iran wanted to kill us, as if they hadn't been pushing Iran towards this endlessly. And so this is the thing. This weekend can't really be talked about anymore. Before it was like, well, you know, Israel's not really getting hit. That's all AI. And Iran is not doing as well as they say they are. Well, this weekend, I mean, that's not an argument. They can't make that argument anymore. Now they're saying, oh my God, the UN needs to step in and help us because Iran's beating us so badly. And like, this is, I think this is the line I'm looking for. It's, Israel faces stiff Hezbollah resistance as it attempts to push deeper into Lebanon. Israel and Hezbollah engaged in intense ground clashes in at least three strategic areas in South Lebanon as Israel pushes its own ground invasion of its neighbor. I can't find it exactly, but there's a line in one of these stories that literally says the war began when Hezbollah fired rockets into Israel after Israel had been bombing Lebanon for 4 months. So it's like for 4 months, they bomb Lebanon. And then the moment Hezbollah launches a rocket, that's when the war begins. It didn't begin when they were bombing Lebanon. That was normal. Just that was average. That was like whatever. Your normal average carpet bombing of civilian infrastructure. That was fine. Normal. That's not war. The moment Hezbollah fires a rocket back, that's when the war began. And they just attacked Israel out of nowhere. Can you believe how bad these people are? It's like that's the psychological paradigm that they have set up. It's like impossible to try to reason with. Okay. So that's just where we are at this point. But importantly, you have to understand that the missile program from Iran is not new. It's been around for a while, and they've had the ability to wipe out American bases and basically destroy Israel the entire time, the entire time. So all through the Gaza Holocaust, all through the bombing of Lebanon, all through all of this, Iran has had the ability at any point to take the gloves off and smack us around a little bit. And that is absolutely what has happened over the last 3 weeks. We have lost billions and billions of dollars in radar arrays. Our bases have been all but destroyed. Israel basically doesn't even have an Iron Dome anymore, and they're just being hit with abandon by Iran. That's not a new capability. Iran always had that capability. Think about the number of provocations that Iran has allowed itself to be subjected to throughout the Gaza war. I mean, they bombed a graduating class of Iranian officers just in the middle of their graduation ceremony. It killed all of them. We're not at war with them. You know, just slaughter all of them. They bombed the diplomatic mission, the embassy in Damascus, I believe, where they killed the Iranian diplomat in general. There was another bombing. Just like time and time again, even the Soleimani bombing, I would say, you know, going back to that, that was a provocation. But of course, Iran every time would respond in the most perfunctory way possible, meaning like the most minimal way possible, right? They have to respond, right? When America assassinates Qasem Soleimani, they have to respond. So they send one, decommissioned warhead just to show that they could hit our bases if they want, but it doesn't explode. But just the sheer impact causes brain damage for 80 American soldiers. That happened, you know, a couple years ago. So time and time again, Iran has been willing to endure the most insane provocations, respond in the most perfunctory and sort of controlled way possible. I mean, think about even before the 12-day war, there was the exchange. I think it was in response to that diplomat being killed. But what's his name? Came out with the article. I'm blanking on his name right now. Sidney Blumenthal? Who's the... Anyway, he wrote the article saying basically that there was a back channel and that Iran and America had agreed where they would attack and when, so that there wasn't a big damage, because Iran seemed this whole time to be very concerned about spiraling of violence and the escalation ladder. And they were always willing to take the hit. They were always willing to go, look, you slapped us out of nowhere. You bombed our embassy with no warning and for no reason. We can't just let you do that. We have to respond to you or else we lose legitimacy in our own minds. But we don't want this to go out crazy. We're not going to bomb your diplomatic mission. We're not going to bomb your embassy. We're going to bomb some installations. We're going to tell you where they are. You can get people out of there. We don't want this going crazy. So the powers that be and the mainstream media and the politicians always wanted to portray this as Iran being weak. We now know Iran was never weak. Iran never was kept in this position of only responding perfunctorily out of necessity because they were weak and couldn't respond and just had to take it. They always had the ability to take out our bases. They always had the ability to take out Dimona. They always had and still do have the ability to take out the desalination plants or anything else they want in Israel. They have always resisted being they've never been the aggressors. They've always even resisted responding to the point they waited. They did not respond. They did not unleash their missile battery until their entire leadership had been taken out, until the war against them had already been launched in earnest. They literally waited until the last possible moment they could, at a moment where they are in a massive disadvantage. Wouldn't it have been easier and simpler and more efficient for them not to wait until their entire command structure was obliterated and they had to fall back on their back benches? What if they had their full bench of, you know, military and civilian leadership still there? And what if it was a sneak attack in the middle of like 2024 where American soldiers, you know, we don't have all the ships there. We don't have all of our bases ready for combat. What if they snuck attack us in 2024 and obliterated all of our bases and took out all of Israel? They could have. They had that chance. They had that choice. They chose not to take it. So when you look at all of this in totality, it's just like, we're just the bad guys, and Iran has been so patient, it might actually destroy them, and they maybe would have been better off sneaky attacking us earlier.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future, but you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlchemyStore.com.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VFM members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VFM membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the second hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Make sure you're following us on X at Real Alex Jones, at InfoWars. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Big story today, mass casualty event at LaGuardia Airport. New York's LaGuardia Airport closes after crash on runway. An Air Canada jet carrying more than 70 passengers collided with a fire truck while landing in New York's LaGuardia Airport late Sunday, killing the pilot and co-pilot and injuring several others, officials say. The fire truck was crossing the tarmac after an air traffic controller gave it permission to respond to another plane reporting an odor on board. Before the collision, an air traffic controller can be heard on airport communications frantically telling the fire truck to stop. In a transmission nearly 20 minutes later, the controller appeared to blame himself. "We were dealing with an emergency earlier," the controller said. "I messed up." About 40 passengers and crew members on the regional jet were taken to hospital, some with serious injuries. Most were released by Monday morning, authorities said. I believe the pilot and co-pilot actually died as a result of this crash. And this has been, frankly, I'm surprised it hasn't happened more. For the last couple of years, the deliberate incompetence of the air traffic controllers has been a real threat to American air travel. And it's, they sort of got a handle on it for a little while. I'm not sure what exact steps they took, but, you know, for the last few years, this has been a regular occurrence. Very near misses, very close calls at airports. And I've been saying for the last couple of years, it's only a matter of time, because all it takes is one pilot not being completely on the ball and reacting with split second timing with extreme professionalness. Like, all it takes is that one event. There have been multiple events in America just the last 3 or 4 years where if the pilot didn't make a last second correction, if they weren't completely on the ball, it would have been a, I mean, forget, you know, two dead, 41 injured. It would have been hundreds of bodies on the tarmac. It was only a matter of time. And this, I would put to, you know, a couple of things. Obviously, there is the shutdown going on, which has the TSA lines, security lines, stretching for, in some cases, 6-7 hours, to where if you arrive for a flight at 7 in the evening, if you get there at noon, you might miss it. That's crazy. And is, of course, deliberate, right? At the same time, we're signing a $200 billion check to wage the war in Iran. So it's not like we don't have the money. It's not like it's not possible to do this. But every time the government shuts down, every time we have to go through this ridiculous song and dance with the Democrats, they shut down the things that affect us. They want to inconvenience us so that we get angry at them and demand that they just pass it through, because we don't want to be missing our flights and not being able to go on vacation because they're tying up the TSA. But they're tying up the TSA, and they're not releasing the funding for the TSA because they want to defund ICE and allow illegal immigrants to live here forever, and they won't pass the SAVE Act. Like, it's all tied in together. And it's deliberate. Again, this is not, it's like everything, all of the real problems America faces are not real problems at all. Things actually affecting average Americans, it's not Iran, right? That's not a real problem to Americans. It's a real problem to Israelis that America is, you know, suffering, having to deal with. But Iran's not the ones who offshored all of our shipbuilding so that we create something like 2 oil tankers a year to China's 1,000. That wasn't Iran that did that. Iran didn't make us force DEI hiring practices into the most important life and death industries in our country, including medical care, air traffic controllers, engineering. Yeah, we lowered the standard because not enough minorities were getting in. You also had a big cheating scandal that went totally unaddressed because there was like a black air traffic controller union that was giving the answers to the test to their people so they could get hired, because they, you know, really wanted a greater representation in the air traffic controller union. And so what if, you know, Americans have to die and air travel is no longer safe? All these fraud, they aren't real. They're created by our fellow Americans. They're created by other people screwing us over. Now 2 people are dead, 41 people injured because of our ridiculous and unending incompetence. It's only getting worse, folks.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultra-methylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
And it's time for humanity to stand up in the info war and say, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this, but you want to fight? You better believe you've got one!
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Crowds don't make me nervous. Mm-hmm. This time I went to this event and I'm sitting there with the promoter and I could feel the energy of the crowd. You know, and I said to the promoter, you know, I get the feeling that when this is over, they're all going to want to come down. And he's all, don't worry, in his broken English, we have many bodyguards, so forth. So the thing ends, sure enough, and these people, very compassionate people, they come charging down and these bodyguards surround me and then I got one on each arm. And I tell you, they were literally fighting for their lives to get me through the crowd. And the first time I'd really got nervous. I said, if they get through these bodyguards, I'm duck soup.
Oh, boy. Come on. You could have fought your way out.
No way.
There have been so many amazing souls on this planet, and the ones I've had a chance to know that die, I just never feel like I give them any justice because they're so cool. And that's why I've not said much about Chuck Norris dying, because if you really knew his whole life, which most people don't, they know like one piece of it, or people I talk to, he really was an amazing, classy Zen guy, and of course a great Christian, but I mean like Zen, like focused and centered for real. And so I've been thinking about trying to watch clips and, you know, do a whole show on it, which I'm going to do later in the week. But here's just a clip from him on Conan O'Brien talking about going to Russia. And out of all the places he's been and done, the energy was completely different. And from my own research, I haven't been to Russia, but know some Russians, studied it, see what other historians have said. It's the intensity and the fact that they like you, and the fact that they're, I would compare them to like what Thomas Jefferson talked about, like American farmers. It's just basically Christian farmers that got taken over by communists that the proto-globalists put in charge. The story he tells, the story I've been told over and over again, so I want to go to Russia someday. Is that, you know, they're like us, they're drunks and they got all their problems, but they're just real people. And they've been demonized, they've been lied about. Here's Chuck Norris from all over the world. And I've seen other interviews he's done talking about the Russians and just how authentic they were and how real they were and almost basically tore them apart trying to get to him. I mean, that's passion, folks. You can't stop that. You know who else has passion? The Persians. And they're nuts under, you know, Shiite brainwashing, and that makes them even more dangerous. And I'm just simply saying, we don't want to bite off more than we can chew. Hey, Trump's taking down Cuba? Incredible. He's taking down Venezuela? Incredible. I just hope he doesn't get high on that and just think he's invincible and then bite off more than he can chew, because that was happening to Napoleon. It happened to Hitler. I'm not comparing Trump to Napoleon and Hitler. They were true expansionists, but my point is that that's how this works. History repeats. Anyways, here's a clip of Chuck Norris talking about Russia.
I'm here with Chuck Norris.
You mentioned that you've trained a lot of black belts who are in Russia. You're actually quite a big star in Russia. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, you know, amazingly, about 3 years ago, I got invited over there to go to a kickboxing event in Moscow. And I thought, well, you know, I've never been there, so mm-hmm. I'd like to go over there. And because, you know, I have black belts that have come over and trained with me from Russia, but I've never been there. So I go over there, and unbeknownst to me, about 10 years ago, martial arts was outlawed in Russia. And if you used it, they put you in jail. And so they trained underground, but they had no teachers, and they were using my pirated movies, tapes, to
really?
Train. Yeah, I used the training aids, and so I went over there. I was like their mentor, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was very surprised. And so at this kickboxing event, they had a facility of like 30,000 people. When the word got out I was going to be there, they sold it out in like 5 hours. And it was amazing because, you know, crowds don't make me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
This time I went to this event, and I'm sitting there with the promoter, and I could feel the energy of the crowd. You know, and I said to the promoter, you know, I get the feeling that when this is over, they're all going to want to come down. And he's all, don't worry, in his broken English, we have many bodyguards, so forth. So the thing ends, sure enough, man, these people, very compassionate people, they come charging down, and these bodyguards surround me. And then I got one on each arm. And I tell you, they were literally fighting for their lives to get me through the crowd. And the first time I'd really gotten nervous, I said, if they get through these bodyguards, I'm duck soup.
Oh, come on, you could have fought your way out.
No way. Not 30,000, forget
really?
It.
Really?
No, my limit's about, in my movies. I think my limit's about 8.
That's
in my movies.
But you know, in the movies, whenever a crowd of like 50 guys surrounds someone like you in a movie, the guy comes at you one at a time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's true.
That's true.
It's like 15 guys surround you and they've got lead pipes and everything.
Well,
then they come at you one at one and it's just like...
That's the only way you can win.
Yeah, but if this... We have 200 people here tonight. If they all rushed right now, we could take him. Just all together.
Well, I feel sorry for the first three guys.
But I guess the point I'm going for here is if the Russians think you are authentic and that you're real, which Chuck Norris totally is, and just a common good guy but also amazing, then they love you. But that's how all of humanity is. But I'm just saying, we need to stop demonizing these other cultures and peoples we don't even know. They're not the ones invading us like the Muslims. They're not the ones taking our rights and our freedoms. They're not the ones putting fluoride in our water. They're not the ones giving us poison shots. The Russians aren't perfect, but I'm telling you right now, they're not the enemy. And people accuse me of being on some damn payroll by them. I'm on the payroll of you, the viewers and listeners, to support us. I'm on the payroll of the people of the world for peace and a future for humanity. And that's what I'm promoting.
All right, there you go, folks. A little heartfelt message from Alex Jones about the late, great Chuck Norris. And, you know, it's really kind of shocking. You remember how repressive, truly, the communist regime was even there at the very end. I'm not sure when that broadcast was from, but he says about 10 years ago, it must have been the, you know, mid-90s, late-90s, martial arts was illegal. Martial arts was illegal in Russia. Think about that. Like, you think it ends with confiscating your guns? No, no. It's the idea that you can fight back at all, that they don't want you to know. They didn't want you, you know, not practicing martial arts because they thought it was bad for you or something. No, they literally will not allow you to even learn how to fight with your hands because that makes you dangerous. That makes you able to resist their coercion or, you know, their force. So it's a reminder of how crazy things can get. You think, you know, the UK banning knives is bad. Well, they're not quite at the point where they're banning the knowledge of how to fight with your hands yet. But it'll get there. It'll get there eventually. Just incredible. And, of course, it's why Americans and America was loved for so long by everybody that was oppressed. Because they knew that America had the answer to their freedom. They knew that America had the spirit that would say, hey, you need to be armed and know how to fight and defend yourself. And you don't have to take crap from anybody. You're a human being. And you have been given by God the right to resist. All you need is the mechanisms to do so. The guns or the knowledge in that case. So it's like any oppressed person anywhere in the world. It's like, man, if only the Americans would help me out. If only I could be more like the Americans. I could have guns. I could speak freely. That's what made us beloved around the world. That's why the dissidents in Russia were desperate to, you know, climb over the wall and get into West Berlin. It's because on the other side was freedom and self-sufficiency and independence. That was, it's really something incredibly valuable that they had been stripped of. So again, it's just a reminder of what we've lost as we seem hell-bent on uplifting and upholding the most tyrannical people in the world now, and the true freedom fighters and the people who actually do require help freeing themselves from tyranny are our enemies. So we've gone bad. We've gone off the rails, and it's time to get back on. Now, with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Anthony Rubin. He, of course, is a journalist who reports on illegal immigration, human smuggling, and issues affecting the border, although recently he's been a part of this incredibly powerful cadre going to California and exposing the rampant fraud taking place there, including petitions, ballot, voter fraud, all being run through NGOs and the California government itself, cooperating and allowing all of this to go on unmolested. You can follow Muckraker on Muckraker.com, on X at Real Muckraker, and on YouTube at Real Muckraker as well. Welcome to the show, sir.
Harrison, good to be with you, man. It's been a little bit.
It's been a while, and I was just reminiscing at the beginning of the show. I think InfoWars was one of the first big platforms that you got on while you were doing your, I don't know, adventures in Mexico. At least I think that was the first I'd heard of you. But you've just absolutely been killing it the last couple of years, and it's been very gratifying to see what you've been able to do with this. What are you working on now, and why is it so important?
So we got a lot of stuff going on the back burner, which maybe we could get into. But what we're here to talk about is this fraud that myself and other journalists, led by James O'Keefe and this sort of Justice League of journalists that he put together, that we've been out exposing. And just to give people a little overview, basically what we uncovered is in the state of California, you have these things called, ballot initiatives. And so basically if you want to get something, if let's say there's a special interest group and they want to bring something to a general vote in the state of California, what they do is they put together these ballot initiatives. And all that is just it's like a petition. And they hire these special interest groups, massive donors, like very big, powerful donors, will hire these circulators, and all circulators is somebody that'll take this petition and circulate it amongst the general population of California to get signatures. And if enough signatures are gathered, whatever the law is that they are signing on this for on this petition, will be brought to a general vote and it could become law. And so, to give an example, one of the petitions that we saw was, for example, the billionaires tax that they are proposing over there, which is very serious. There's already been very affluent people that have fled the state preemptively to get away from this billionaires tax. And so what we uncovered is that there are criminal petitioners all over the place that are going to places like Skid Row, MacArthur Park. For anybody who's not familiar with that, it's like a Skid Row in a park, basically. And they are paying crackheads and homeless people and other very desperate people with drugs, with cigarettes, or with money to put their names on these ballot petitions to try to bring these things to a general vote. You can only imagine how dangerous that is. So basically laws that otherwise may never have been brought to a vote are then brought to a vote. And then once they are, you're going to have, millions of useful idiots, a lot of anchor babies and people who are given amnesty to actually vote for and likely bring these things to law. So it's very dangerous. And we expose this whole fraudulent system that is being, that's going on right now in California to bring these laws to a vote.
It's sort of the fraud that allows the other fraud, right? There's been a lot of exposés about, welfare fraud and that kind of stuff. But this is like the proto fraud. This is the fraud to get the bills in front of the government to get some fund created that then the fraud, goes out of. This is sort of the font of the fraud, right? It's just like the amount of fraud we're dealing with. The votes are fraud. The petitions are fraud. The money that comes out of the votes and the petition is given away fraudulently. And then it's all covered up in a fraudulent way. It's just like, how does California get a handle on this? Are they even trying to? And what do you think of the reaction to your coverage so far?
Well, how you get a handle on it. So one of the things I learned while I was doing this story, and then after the fact, I was doing a little bit of research into this because I was not really that familiar with this whole ballot petition system. And it varies from state to state. For example, Florida, the state that I'm in right now, it's illegal to pay these petition circulators per signature. The way that the system works in California is these big very wealthy donors is what they're called, the ones who are paying money for these petitions to be circulated. What they do is they actually pay the circulators per valid signature. So if you go out today, you might get paid as much as like $7 or more per valid signature that you can obtain it. So you can imagine right then and there, like, obviously, I don't even need to explain it to you. That incentivizes fraud. If I'm guaranteed to get $7 for a valid signature, okay, I'm just going to go pay a crackhead $2. And I'm going to make $5 guaranteed.
Right.
So in Florida, for example, you're not allowed to do that. There's no such thing as paying people per signature. That's outlawed. And same thing in other states as well. And there's been multiple laws that have been proposed in California during the tenure of Gavin Newsom and even before then. But the ones that have been proposed under Gavin Newsom, at least two bills have been proposed that would outlaw this system that he's vetoed because he says it's going to undermine the democratic will of the people. And so, you know, that's what you have to do. If you want to do away with this, you have to get rid of that incentive paying people per signature. And, you know, we could get into some of the other things we found. You know, one of the things we exposed just by luck is like this international election criminal. And the United States is just the latest country that he's perpetrating this fraud, and I'm happy to get into that.
Tell us about that. I haven't heard about that.
So you know, okay, so we're out there in California, and you see this fraud happening everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I mean literally everywhere. Go to wherever there's homeless people. On a nice sunny day, you're going to see people with clipboards going around, whatever, giving all sorts of incentives for these signatures, right? And so I talked to one of them and I'm like, hey man, let me get a job. And he's like, all right, well, here's the person that I'm employed by, right? And so I call the employer and they go, okay, come in for a group interview today. So we go in and we talk, we're in this group interview, and the people that are running this, well, there's two people that we speak to. They're both African. One of them claims to be from Ghana. Another one claims he's from Switzerland, but he's originally, I believe, he's from some African country. And so, you know, we get on camera, them telling us like, yes, you know, sometimes people give cigarettes in exchange for signatures. Yes, it's okay to do that. So we're like, okay, hey, another piece of evidence, right? So here you have higher ups actually saying that this is okay. However, after this is all said and done, you know, one of my friends, he just decides to put the guy's face through like a reverse face search. And it pops up that this guy, his name is Frank Tesimo, people could look him up, is under or came under criminal investigation in the country of Switzerland for perpetrating this exact same fraud a couple of years ago. And then came to the United States. I don't know if he fled here or what, and apparently is encouraging the same exact fraud here now. And so this is a problem that is going across multiple countries. And, you know, one of the things that stuck out there is just like the brazen nature of some of these foreigners in this country. I've seen it across, you know, many different examples, not just this election or petition fraud example, but the brazenness of some of these foreigners to come here, total disrespect for our laws. And it seems like they don't even care. They're not even worried about being prosecuted. You know, that's what we found though. You know, a suspected international election criminal that did the same thing in Switzerland, doing the same thing here in the United States, most likely.
Yeah, he was probably brought in. I mean, there's probably a reason they're, you know, so confident that they'll never get prosecuted. They probably won't, because they were probably invited by, you know, some Californians that, hey, we saw you did some great work in Switzerland. I'm just speculating, but I don't think that would be, you know, out of the ordinary, really. I think these people, there is a sort of bizarre fact that, like, is this even fraud? I mean, if they're allowed to pay for it, if it's technically legal, it's wrong. Obviously, it shouldn't be allowed to happen. Obviously, I'm not even saying that. But the fact is, our laws allow for this, and that has to change. But there's been an interesting phenomenon with the fact that James O'Keefe, yourself, Saban Hernandez, a lot of people out there exposing this aren't being attacked. The reports are actually being taken seriously, it seems. And the response from the California government appears to be, hey, we didn't know this was going on, we're going to look into it, rather than, oh, look at these, you know, racist Nazis lying about us. I mean, why is this so different than other undercover investigations? Even in California specifically, this feels different. Why is that?
Well, you know, the evidence is damning. For one, you know, number two, it's just, I mean, there's, God, I don't even know, four or five of us that are putting out these reports every day. There's going to be more reports coming out this week, just trying to hammer them day after day after day after day. And, you know, it's not only just the reports, but we are also following up relentlessly, calling government officials, calling the mayor's office, calling the California Secretary of State's office and other departments as well, making sure that, you know, we are going to make their life miserable. try to embarrass them at least, unless they do something about this. And it really is going to be a problem that they can't ignore. And then there are, you know, some friendly media outlets that are also picking this up. And I just think that collective pressure from these different angles, you know, hopefully is going to lead to some arrests. We'll see. I mean, I will tell you, man, California is a failed state. I can't express that enough. I used to live in Los Angeles. I left there 2.5 years ago. And I will tell you, I left for 2.5 years and I came back for my first extended visit just, you know, the last couple of weeks to do the story. 2.5 years I was gone. And I'm telling you, the amount of economic decline that I have seen in that state just during my 2.5 year departure, it is noticeable. Major stores. I could list like 10 different stores that I used to frequent that are just shut down and nobody has since come in and taken over the building. It's just a big for lease sign on this empty storefront, right? And so, right, and then more homeless people, buildings that I used to see that were clean that are now full of graffiti, it's gotten worse. And so things are at a point in California now where it's clearly so corrupt and it's clearly in such a state of decline that, you know, the politicians that are in charge are clearly not doing their job, clearly derelict in their duty. And so it's going to be very difficult, I believe, to get a response out of them, more difficult than in other states. But I think with this collective pressure, you know, we stand a good chance.
Well, and again, it just reminds me of like the Somali welfare fraud where it's like, I don't think any of this money should be going away. Again, I think it's all kind of fraudulent, you know, to varying degrees. But it's like, if you're the Democrats and you like welfare, you think there should be these really giant, you know, programs by the government to give people money to help them. You should be the ones who are concerned about the fraud, not me. I think the whole thing's fraud. I want the whole thing to go away. It should be the people that love these programs that care about the fraud. It should be the Democrats who are democratic. They want the people to have a say. They should be the ones that are outraged that their system is being hijacked by this, right? What is the attitude you've gotten from just your average Los Angelian or Californian out there? Do they care about this when they're told about this? Do they know it's going on? Like, what is the reaction of the average person? I would think they'd be pissed that democracy is being hijacked like this.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to tell, to be honest with you, because I haven't done like a public opinion poll, but you know, from the comments, people are definitely pissed off. But you know, there really is a portion of people in this country, unfortunately, that have their head in the sand. You know, it's like, Yuri Bezmenov, the KGB agent, right? He talks about ideological subversion and how there are certain people where no matter what you do, you can put the evidence right in front of them, and no matter what, they still won't believe you. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people like that. I've seen it firsthand. It doesn't matter what you show them. You know, oh, this isn't widespread. Oh, come on, it really can't be that bad. And so there's nothing you can do about those people. But on the whole, I think that people are pissed. And on, you know, the other thing, unfortunately, is I think people are so demoralized. You see all the comments. It's like, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. There will be no prosecutions. People are so demoralized. And so I hope that, you know, this time there can be some arrest and we could, you know, show some success.
Yeah, that I think is the biggest issue, is that this stuff gets revealed and then nothing is done about it. It's almost worse than not revealing in the first place. It's like, okay, now we're almost being, you know, indoctrinated into this idea that like, yeah, these scams happen. And even when they get caught, even if, I mean, in the case of Minnesota, you have people who were tried, charged, convicted by a jury for some of the fraud, and then the judge just throws the case out. So, I mean, the whole system clearly relies on this fraud. It's upheld by this fraud. If the fraud goes away, their power goes away. So they're very incentivized to keep it going. But obviously it is destroying California, as you point out, and it'll destroy America if we allow it to spread there. Again, my guest is Anthony Rubin from Muckraker. You can go to muckraker.com. He's on X at Real Muckraker, and the YouTube is Real Muckraker. And of course, they're a part of the Justice League, as James O'Keefe puts it. For those who say nothing will happen, you can go to hell. The Cash for Ballot videos from the Justice League, Cam Higby, Anthony Rubin, Savannah Hernandez, and O'Keefe Media have led to SOS, California Governor, LADA, and DOJ to taking action. They're not attacking us because the actual crimes are on tape and it gets worse. We're going to release a new video every day until someone gets arrested. Don't tell me nothing will happen. It will happen. We've worked for 2 months so that it will happen. More with Anthony Rubin on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We'll be right back after these short messages.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
Ultimate Life Force. That's the name of the new product. This is hands down the strongest, most powerful spike protein detox out there with triple action, taking all the major best-selling certified safe formulas and integrating it in to just a massive daily dose. And it isn't just to clean out your blood, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good for your whole body. It's got 400 milligrams of NAC alone that is the precursor to glutathione, and just does incredible things for your whole body. Not just that, the energy, the stamina, all of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so excited about this formula. I don't have time to get into all the other great ingredients in it. Go to thealexhomestore.com right now and check it out for yourself. This is so game-changing. Lesser formulas have already helped so many people that I've personally bought them for and, you know, given them to friends and family. This is amazing. Get yours now at thealexhomestore.com, 50% off.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on the Alex Jones Show.
How many of the signatures that you guys gather are paid for with cigarettes?
Don't touch his camera.
Do not touch his camera.
All you got to do is just say money for a signature.
Money for a signature.
You could lie. Say this is to build more homeless shelters.
Oh, just make up some bullshit.
Yeah.
There's this table here where they are giving cigarettes in exchange for signatures on ballot initiatives, which is a very serious crime.
We're going to be referring this matter to law enforcement.
Who cares? Do it.
Put that camera on my feet.
In California, potential laws can be put on the ballot through something called a ballot petition. Campaigns hire petition circulators to go out and collect signatures from registered voters. If they collect enough signatures, that law gets placed on the ballot for everyone to vote on. Under California law, it is illegal to give anyone money or something of value in exchange for their signature. Here in Los Angeles, we uncovered a massive scandal surrounding these petitions. Over the course of our investigation, we discovered a suspected international election criminal. We exposed that many of the signatures used to put new laws on the ballot may have been gathered fraudulently. And we reveal how criminals are profiting while undermining California's electoral process. Our story begins here on Skid Row, where petition fraud can be seen in broad daylight.
So there you go. This is the expose by Muckraker. Anthony Rubin is my guest. You can follow Muckraker on Muckraker.com, on X at Real Muckraker, on YouTube as well at Real Muckraker. They are one of a number of independent journalists and independent outlets that are exposing California fraud. And Anthony, what that reminds me of is just that the classic phrase from Noam Chomsky, manufacturing consent, right? They have something that if it was a real thing that people really liked, they'd be able to get signatures on it. They don't have anything that people really like, so they manufacture signatures. They, as you show there, they go, yeah, just tell people it's for homeless shelters, and they'll sign it. They're just getting signatures, and then they're able to turn around and go, look, at there's 10,000 people that want this. This is really about manufacturing consent in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a very good point. 100% it is, and that was kind of my point earlier. It's like we don't even know if these laws or these bills would ever be brought to a general vote, if not for this fraud. And that's why I think that at this point, given that we've proven how widespread this is, you know, it's not just us. There was another independent journalist, just some random guy, I think. I don't even think he's a well-known person, just decided to walk down the streets of San Francisco. He actually reported on this like a week before we dropped our exposés. And just walked down the streets of San Francisco, and they were doing the same exact thing up there. I have to imagine this is all over the state of California. So, look, at this point, I mean, if the place wasn't run by criminals, if it was actually run by good men, what would happen is all of these ballot initiatives, they'd all be thrown out, and they would have to be, you know, refreshed and made sure that it was done correctly. Because at this point, I mean, you could only imagine there must be tens of thousands of fraudulent signatures, either fake signatures or fraudulently obtained signatures on these initiatives. I don't see how any one of these initiatives at this point can still be seen through and brought to a general vote.
So what's the solution to this? Is it just criminal? Is it just investigating and criminalizing this? Or is there need to be some sort of legislative reorganization that says, hey, we can't trust we have to stop this process from occurring and take a more Florida-like approach and say, hey, we can't be allowing this to happen anymore. I mean, what do you think the ultimate solution to this problem really is?
Yeah, you know, I think that it is interesting, you know, cause I do understand why. I mean, I can, let's just say, receive the argument as to why some people may advocate for the system of paying the petition circulators per signature. The argument goes that if you don't allow that, it further, you know, isolates the ability to bring new laws to a general vote to the moneyed interest. Now, it's moneyed interests that are going to be doing this regardless, right? But you're going to need even more money to do so. And the whole idea is because if there's no incentives for the circulator, well, you're going to have to make up for that incentive by, you know, paying them more money to try to find these, you know, signatures. So I get that. But I at this point, though, we've seen that it is a vector for fraud and abuse. And yeah, I think that the most clearest cut thing to do, look, if I was governor, I would call for a bill to be put on my desk that would outlaw this practice outright, because I don't see any other way. Look, you could, even if you prosecute all these individuals to the fullest extent of the law, that might have a chilling effect. People might get scared and maybe they'll go underground for a little bit, but give it a year, give it 2 years, and you know, the heads will surface again that are going to be doing this, and it's just going to continue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it gets so much worse, like when you really get down to the details. Of course, we had James O'Keefe on last week. I believe his crew was attacked over the weekend in Skid Row, if I'm not mistaken. Physically, have you faced any threats going out there and doing this reporting?
No, not on. Actually, I mean, yes, but not.
You have a higher tolerance, maybe. We did see in the video there where the guy shoves the camera, so there's always a little bit of a threat. But no, but you haven't been surrounded and attacked to any degree.
No, not yet. Yeah, we've had our fair share of that doing other stories, but in this one, we came out unscathed, thankfully. But, you know, anything could happen, man. I mean, you are dealing with people, again, that they do not, you know, I believe with some of these people, the thought of even, like, that you're violating the law and, you know, like, second, third, fourth order consequences with some of these people, it seems to not exist, honestly. Just look at their reactions. I mean, I confronted some of these people and I'm like, hey, you understand you're breaking the law, right? And they're like, they blatant disregard. They seem not to care. Maybe it's just a poker face. I'm not sure. But with some of these people, actually, I think all the people that you see in that video, it's just a blatant disregard. It's like they simply don't care. And so, yeah, some of them could get violent. You don't know.
Well, it's just crazy. But of course, you've been in some stickier situations. In fact, you know, how you started crossing over the border from Mexico. I think you've had enough excitement for several lifetimes. But on that note, this is a report that just got dropped to me a minute ago from Brianna Morello. The FBI has sent out a memo to law enforcement detailing an elevated threat in the United States during the U.S.-Iran war. It's a situational awareness report dated March 20th, 2026, highlights the potential for elevated physical threats by the government of Iran following the U.S. and Israeli military strikes against Iran, in particular against the U.S. military and government personnel. But, of course, this goes to the stay-behind networks, the potential for, you know, attacks from Iranians staged here, or Hezbollah members or whatever else. As somebody who has spent a lot of time investigating and experiencing firsthand the porous border during Joe Biden's tenure as president, what do you think the threat of attacks from hostile immigrants is these days? Have you been keeping up with that? And what's your take on the threat of stay behind networks here in America?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a lot to say about this this undeclared, you know, constitutionally undeclared war in Iran. You know, we don't have an act of Congress. It seems like this is just where we're headed, right? It's like we're headed towards a system where it's just this powerful executive that's totally unchecked that could just drag us into foreign conflicts. But now let me answer your question directly. Absolutely. Look, I remember talking to Mike Adams, who I know is a regular guest on InfoWars.
Yep.
I was talking to him in the winter of 2023. And I'm not saying anything that isn't public. I mean, people could watch the interview with him that I was doing where he said this. And he told me, and I think this was later reported on, that he had heard from State Department contacts that there were surface-to-air missiles that were being tracked, that were smuggled over the border and lost, apparently, somewhere in the interior of this country. I believe that was later reported on in mainstream outlets. So maybe you guys could pull that up. Now, as far as, like, the physical people that are in this country, man, I saw so many of them. When I was crossing through the Darien Gap, for example, there was a group of, and maybe you guys could find this on my Twitter somewhere, there was this group of men who claimed off camera to be from Syria. And these were very, very serious men. And it was very suspicious because they all claimed to be from Syria. And they were all, interestingly, wearing like crucifix necklaces, like almost too overtly, right? It's like they were putting on a show, all wearing the same boots, and they took a very special path, like a path that I didn't know about, through the Darien Gap. And there's a video of me where I'm confronting these people, and they're, I don't know, there's maybe about 10 of them, but they looked like very serious men. They were clearly on a mission. And God knows, I mean, if you guys want to pull up the video, maybe look up like Syrian man Darien Gap on my Twitter. You guys can pull it up and see this. And the point is, when you see a video like that, there are so many people like that in this country now. I mean, think about the video that was put out. I forget who it was by, but he was down, I think, in Arizona near the border. And there were just these people, these aliens that had just crossed. And I believe this guy was like from the Middle East. And remember, he was like, you do not know who I am now, but soon you will all know who I am. And
right.
Thousands of these people. And all you need is a small handful, and there could be serious havoc wreaked against our country.
And it's such a vice that we're in. It's like a Chinese finger trap because, you know, I know you're a libertarian, and so am I. You know, I've got those libertarian instincts, and you can see just from your reporting and all the fraud that goes on, clearly the size of the government is a big issue. But we got to do something about the migrants, so you got to empower ICE to go in and round them up. And yet it looks like they're using that in a lot of ways, using that as a precedent to massively expand the power of organizations like ICE, expand surveillance power, adopt things like Palantir into the, you know, government to spy on everybody and use AI to, you know, create this massive panopticon, this digital, you know, surveillance system. How do we solve the problem of something like illegal immigration without falling into the trap of empowering the government with these, you know, incredible abilities that will eventually be turned on us? Like, how do we solve this problem without giving power to the federal government and having it turn on us? How do we avoid this?
Yeah, well, that's the $40 trillion question. And to be honest with you, I don't see a good way out of this. You know, it's the same thing. It's like government creates a crisis, and then the solution of the crisis is more government. And, you know,
and it doesn't
solve
the crisis, by the way. That's the other thing on top of it, right?
Exactly. But they sell you on this, you know, supposed solution, and it's always, oh, we'll give us more power and we'll take care of it, right? And, you know, so as far as it's concerning these illegal immigrants, you know, I would say I'm a libertarian, but, you know, where I break with the libertarians is these are open border people, right? They seem to have no issues with just like the free flow of people between borders. And I guess in a perfect world that works, but we don't live in a perfect world. And so I do believe in very strong borders. And not only that, but like rights of citizenship need to be curbed. I think right now the biggest issue, to be honest with you, is not even the deportations. The biggest issue right now is the birthright citizenship issue. Because look, deporting 10 million people, and I would like to go beyond the people who came under Biden. I mean, we need to deport everybody that's here illegally, ultimately. But even if you wanted to sort of give a sort of amnesty to these people and say, listen, you know, okay, you came here illegally, you've been here for 30 years, okay, you could stay here, you know, you're not going to be able to vote, you're not going to be a full citizen. Even if you wanted to entertain that discussion, it cannot be entertained unless there are some guarantees that their offspring and the children of those children are never going to be citizens.
Right.
Right? But that's not the situation we're in. And given that we're not in that situation, I mean, literally, Harrison, as far as I see it, every single minute counts at this point, because every day there are thousands of new children that are being born to parents that don't have any loyalty to the United States. They don't even speak English, right? Let alone understand Hamilton and Jefferson and our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And so it's going to be a very dangerous situation 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line, when these people are now mature. They are American citizens on paper. And now they're going to be in our military, perhaps in very high ranking positions. They're going to be in local police departments, again, perhaps in very high ranking positions. And you could only imagine how dangerous that could be. I could keep going on and on about it, but to answer your question, look, it cannot be done without a mass civilian awakening to put pressure on the government to see through these mass deportations, but with enough oversight to know that, you know, we're not going to give birth to some system that is going to tyrannize us 15 years down the line.
And that's always seems to be what happens. You know, Real ID was originally put forward as a solution to illegal immigration. Well, you'll have to have Real ID to work. Illegal immigrants won't have it. Illegal immigrants won't be able to work. Well, we got Real ID. It got implemented. And the, you know, illegal immigrant population exploded. So, again, it's like they offer this solution to the problem that they created and doesn't even solve the original problem anyway. It's just a bunch of other problems on top of it. And you're so right to point out the problem of having people who are completely different from us morally, like their belief system, the value that we put on liberty. They simply don't have that in their culture, because the sort of stopgap measure in America is just the average person is like, okay, if the government gives orders to the local police to go round up people and kill them, it's the local police that are going to go, no, we're not doing that. This is against everything we believe in. But if you replace all those local police with foreigners that don't have that compunction, who don't care about those values, they're perfectly willing to go out and tyrannize people. It doesn't, you know, outrage them like it would an American who was raised in this culture and with these beliefs. So it's really, really dangerous. And of course, we can see the outcome when you're showing some African / Swiss, you know, fraudster is allowed to come here and ply his trade, as it were. It's just it's a very dangerous situation that we find ourselves in. I should have been more clear. You do call yourself a libertarian nationalist, which I think is a great phrase, because you do need to separate yourself from the people that, you know, just say there needs to be no government. We do need some government. It has to be intelligently applied. But it seems now like AI, the story from Reuters this weekend, Pentagon to adopt Palantir AI as core U.S. military system as we, you know, unveil these domestic spying apparatuses that are being used by this. So, I mean, this is a real big threat here. What do you think the threat is for AI being implemented in this way? Like, where do you think it goes from here, and what are the big dangers we have to be aware of?
Well, I mean, there's many potential avenues we could go down. To be honest with you, you know, what concerns me, I mean, there's many things that concern me. You know, one of them is nuclear war, which at this point, I mean, this war in Iran could easily go nuclear. I know when you asked me about AI, and I will get into, you know, more digital stuff. But I mean, honestly, at this point, this war could very, very easily go nuclear, because at this point, we're in a situation where we either need to see this thing through, or we need to back out and forever take a diminished position in the Middle East, which I don't believe that, you know, the powers that be are willing to do at this point, not yet at least. And I don't think that they are going to be able to have a quick, quote unquote, decisive victory anytime soon without the use of like a tactical nuclear weapon. And so I'm very concerned that that could happen. So that's like chief among my concerns. Now let's cross our fingers and hope we don't go there. You know, what I believe is going to be a, how does one say? I guess sort of a catalyst to bring about a lot of like this digital technocracy is going to be a collapse in the United States dollar. There are already sort of like plans in place, things that are being discussed for a digital dollar,
right?
And ultimately, we are going to have a sovereign debt crisis. That is written in the bones at this point. It's clear that nobody in power is, they're not even discussing it at this point, let alone trying to do something about it. Trump is calling for lower interest rates, right? He's calling for, now they're calling for $200 billion out of thin air to pay for this horrible war in Iran. So the dollar, at a certain point, the dollar is going to drop out from underneath it. I'm sure you saw the reports that came out about a week ago where there was speculation that, you know, Iran would let certain oil pass through the Strait of Hormuz if it was priced in yuan and not dollars, right? So this is ultimately where we're going to go one way or another. How we get there or when we get there is anybody's guess, but the dollar is going to collapse. So when that happens, and when there is massive inflation in this country, perhaps hyperinflation, and there's mass civil unrest, I believe that is when people are going to be convinced to accept this sort of, you know, digital dollar. And with that, you can tie that to a, you know, an AI system that will track all of your spending habits. And if you spend money in the wrong place or visit the wrong business or patronize the wrong people, AI systems will pick that up. It'll be in place with Palantir and others to then maybe debank you. And I think that a crisis like that is what it's going to take to then push us over the edge. And people will willingly then accept the system, although foolishly.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I know you're right because they're putting all this stuff in place, and these people aren't establishing billion-dollar data centers for fun, right? They have a plan for a return on investment. It might not be money, but they'll get the control that they are paying for. EU proposes links European business registration to digital ID wallets. So we're already seeing this roll out in the EU where they're installing the digital ID program. They're using, you know, the claims of pornography or any of this other stuff to justify age restriction on the internet, meaning you have to supply your ID. So again, it seems like all this stuff is just being built in the background. It's completely at odds with the will of the people. Just like everything in Europe, you know, they demand less immigration, they get more immigration. We, as Americans, demand no war with Iran, we get war with Iran. How do we reclaim our system in the West? Because clearly our democracy is non-functional. I think the examples that the real Justice League is pointing out in California is just further proof of that, that the entire facade of democracy is a giant lie. Any which way you cut it, it's like a fractal, right? The more you zoom in, it just looks the same. Or you can zoom out and it looks exactly the same. It's all fraud on every level. How do we reclaim our system here? Is voting even worth it, or do we need to, you know, be moving on the system itself and trying to build something new?
What I will say is this. Number one, people need to get educated. And when I say get educated, pick up a history book, right? Because most people are not even acquainted with like basic history. Pick up a history book, pick up an economics book, anything that interests you that is, you know, politically adjacent. And then you need to get involved. And when I say get involved, you know, I'm not even necessarily saying, you know, run for Congress or, you know, run for Senate or something like that, or governor. But, you know, get involved in your local town. Right. Maybe you could sit on some committee in your local town. Maybe you could get involved at a state level. Maybe you can get involved at a federal level. Maybe you could help somebody that is already involved. Right. There's a million ways that you can take action. But what I will say is this. At this point, you got to do something. I can't tell you what to do. right? Because I don't know every individual's strengths that are watching this. Everybody is different. Everybody has something different to contribute. But you have to do something, because nobody, and I mean absolutely nobody, none of our allies, certainly not our greatest, the greatest of our allies, are coming to save us. We are on our own, and we are a sinking ship, and going down faster and faster by the day. And so at this point, you need to very quickly recognize that nobody is coming to save you. No politician is coming to save you. Only we can save ourselves. And so, you know, if that message resonates, you need to start today to do something, and literally anything, as long as you're moving the needle forward in some way, shape, or form. Otherwise, this country is going to go the way of the dodo bird. You know, you can see it very clearly in some cities. And if you don't see it near you, it is going to be coming very soon.
That's exactly right. I mean, people can put off the effects of this for long enough. Eventually, there's going to be a time where you call 911 and nobody answers, or, you know, you go to the hospital and the doctor doesn't speak English. Like, it's going to hit you at a certain point that these problems cannot be put off forever. And I think, you know, your career up to this point has been a great example for people to follow. I remember saying this to you when you first burst on the scene with your coverage of the immigration stuff. It was like, here's a guy who just decided to one day get involved, said, I want to do something. I want to make a change. I want to make people aware of what's going on. And you did it, and you're doing it. And it's only continuing to grow and expand and be more impactful. So take the Anthony Rubin route. If you're out there and wondering what you can do, you have a camera, right? You have a telephone in your pocket. Get it out, start recording things, put it on the internet, make a change, actually cause change to occur. And of course, combine with your friends like James O'Keefe and Cam Higby and everybody else. And now we have a revolution going. That's really what we need. What is next for Muckraker? What can people expect to see next out of your outlet and your phenomenal work, sir?
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, so recently it was last month, or rather the month before last, we released a documentary, Replacing Europe. That's on Tucker Carlson Network, where we followed the entire illegal alien route from Africa to the Canary Islands and then across Europe. It's the first documentary of its kind. That's on Tucker Carlson Network. Eventually, probably later this year, we will be releasing it for free. And when we do that, I would love to come back on your show and discuss that at length, because it truly is the findings that are in there, the undercover videos that we got of like UN officials. There's nothing like that. So you and I, maybe we could discuss that later in the year.
Love to.
Now, as far as what's next, people can keep an eye out on muckraker.com. There's going to be reports going out very soon. Massive corruption in New York, with, you know, under Mamdani, tons of corruption up there involving illegal immigrants that are, you know, just living off the government dole. We're going to be doing some stuff, some very dangerous work south of the border involving, you know, speaking to certain criminal elements. And, you know, beyond that, keep an eye out for what we're doing with this newly established Justice League. There's going to be more stories coming soon exposing waste, fraud, and abuse. You can find it all at muckraker.com, at Real Muckraker on all social media platforms.
There you go, at Real Muckraker, muckraker.com. And, of course, you can follow Anthony himself at Anthony J. Rubin on X. Thank you so much for being here with us, and keep up the phenomenal work, sir.
Thank you, Harrison. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure is all mine. I can't wait to see that that EU documentary, too, because we know this stuff factually. We know it sort of like statistically, but, man, seeing it on the ground, seeing how the sausage is made, it's a whole other animal. Folks, I'm going to be joined by Brandon Weikert in the next hour. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Right now, it is 30% off site-wide. Absolutely mega sale on thealexjonesstore.com. Every product, 30% off. That includes the reintroduced iodine tincture, our trifecta iodine tincture T3. That's your classic X2, but even better. And this is the final week to enter to win both the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 and the 2025 Ford Raptor Plus $20,000 in cash. For every $1 you spend, you get 100 times entries to win both. But you got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. It's your last chance to get this massive discount and be entered to win both cars.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that.
when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue T-shirt, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAllExcellentStore.com. Our medical-grade USP Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively at TheAllExcellentStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a one-month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com and at Funzer Operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'll be joined very shortly by Brandon Weikert. In fact, normally we wait until the second segment to bring him on, but if he's ready now, we got so much to talk about. I kind of want to just hit the ground running here. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. This is Brandon Weikert, of course, if you are
a regular
viewer of InfoWars. You know him well. You can follow him at WeTheBrandon on X. His website is WeikertReport.com. And, of course, Brandon, you've been everywhere providing analysis for the Iran war, and you've been right a heck of a lot more than you've been wrong. I don't even know if you've been wrong so far, which is
so
very different.
Far, no.
Most analysts are having to reestablish their stance every couple of days or so. How have you been able to predict things so successfully in the latest iteration of the Iran conflict?
Well, I like to think my Christian faith informs me. I know the fallibility of man, in particular are the fallibility of our politicians, and I just assume they don't know what they're doing based on that, as well as my years working in government and all the time I've had briefing the military and all the experiences I've had professionally dealing with the national security state. This is not a group of particularly competent actors, and unfortunately, I think the president has been schnookered also by our allies in Israel, and here we are.
It's troubling. That does absolutely seem to be the case, unlike almost any other time during Trump's administration. You could always kind of tell, like, well, okay, here's what he's actually going for. Here's what his real intentions are. He might message it kind of strangely. But I do get the sense that they're just completely unmoored and have no idea what they're doing. So you're saying that's not just a strategy of keeping them all guessing and it's actually 5D chess. They actually are just underwater at this point, have no idea
what's going on. Yeah, they're underwater. I just saw when I was waiting to come on, Trump apparently just said that he doesn't refer to this as a war. He refers to this as a special military operation, which of course is very similar language to what Putin was saying at the start of the Ukraine war. And also, by the way, Obama renamed the war on terror to the Overseas Contingency Operation. Whatever you want to call it, guys in D.C. right. and gals, it's a war. And unfortunately, we're losing that war at the strategic level, which is where it counts.
That's what it seems like to me as well. Why do you say we're losing the war?
Well, it's very simple, and I think I said this to you the last time I was on the show, but I'm happy to repeat it because it's worth repeating. Warfare is an extension of politics through other means. That's what Clausewitz has always said, and it's true. It's a political act inherently. The policy we have set forward, the strategy, what are we trying to achieve? Well, regime change is one, but then they're saying we want to denuclearize, and then they're saying we want to get rid of the ballistic missiles, and oh, if we can get rid of their support in Iran for terrorism, that's great. And by the way, we can also get rid of the Iranian Navy and Air Force. That's like six things we're trying to accomplish with a very small force that's highly restrained because it's an aerial force only that's already being strapped. Meanwhile, the Iranian regime, their strategy is just to survive. That's all they have to do. They win by staying, clinging on in power and in control of the situation. And they know also the United States in particular has a finite amount of critical weapons stockpiles. There's about 14 systems in particular that are very key that we're running out of, air interceptors and some of these standoff munitions. And then also they know the Americans and the Israelis and the Arabs cannot handle economic pain. So the Iranians are imposing a very comprehensive strategy to prolong the war because the time will give them great capabilities to maneuver, and then also to hurt us at the economic global level. And it's working. We're not achieving our goals. The Iranians are. The longer it lasts, they win by default.
Certainly seems to be the trajectory as it stands now, and try as you might, Trump is not able to put a fresh coat of paint on this and make it look like a victory, which maybe it's like that's what we need. We all need to pretend that we won. If we all just say, congratulations, Trump, you did it. You got totally victory. We're all very impressed. Let's all go home.
I'd be happy to at this point.
Right? I mean, we did it. We declare victory. We beat Iran. They'll never come back. Let's just bring the boys home, get out of the Middle East once and for all. More with Brandon Weikert on the other side. This has been the craziest weekend of this entire war. We'll break down some of the most major events on the other side.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th. 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Sweet dreams. Welcome back, folks. Harrison Smith sitting in for Alex Jones today. I'm joined by Brandon Weikert. He's an author, geopolitical analyst, and educator who travels the country lecturing leaders in the U.S. military, academia, and business communities on current trends in geopolitics and high technology research and development. He's also the senior editor at 1945.com. That's 19 and then spelling out 45. The words are spelled out .com. And is a contributor to Popular Mechanics. And he has a couple of really great books. His latest, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. You can follow him on X at WeTheBrandon and the website WeikertReport.com. I was just in the short commercial break there. We had 90 seconds. I was trying to write down all of the things that occurred this weekend that I think were notable in the Iran war. It's in no way an exhaustive list. We have bombing of Dimona. You have Iran bombing civilian places in these villages outside of Tel Aviv. The bombing of Tel Aviv. The admission that Tel Aviv is being bombed. That's the change there, right? Is it's always been bombed. Now they're admitting it and calling it war crimes and trying to go to the UN. You have them admitting that it was Mossad behind the uprising in Iran. That was a bit of an interesting admission from the New York Times. You have the 48-hour deadline from Trump that he's then reversed. You also have the strike on Diego Garcia and the aircraft carrier USS Ford decommissioned potentially for 14 months, as I read at 1945.com. What happened this weekend, Brandon? Why did everything go insane this weekend? What is your interpretation of all this?
Well, in my opinion, it's been insane since the outset. This entire war is an exercise in insanity. And, you know, you are witnessing that. And so, you know, basically the problem here is the Trump administration, and I say the administration, I should say the political people, including Trump, because the military people that I know and the military people at the upper echelon of the Pentagon, to be fair to them, they did try to warn the president that this is not going to be Venezuela. This is not going to be what you're thinking, Mr. President. And the president just didn't listen. He was listening to Netanyahu. My friend Joe Kent, in his recent resignation letter from the Trump administration, explained there was a sort of a feedback loop that was created, or an echo chamber that was put around Trump, which was all pro-Israeli propaganda all the time. And so Trump bought into this line that we could decapitate the regime on February 28th, that weekend, and 72 to 96 hours later, everything would be cleaned up, the people would overthrow the regime, he'd look like a, you know, a brilliant, you know, hero, and, you know, no muss, no fuss. But in reality now, you're seeing the Iranians, for 47 years of their existence, were able to prepare and plan for this very contingency. They knew the Americans were going to try to knock them out, and so they made their regime survivable, and they, you know, decentralized and disaggregated capabilities. They built up arsenals of these missiles and drones, 88,000 Shahed drones they have, maybe even more, and then the hypersonic weapons. And so all of this is part of a comprehensive strategy of survival, because for the Iranian regime, it's existential. For us, it's not existential, so we're sort of like, we're doing this and we're doing that, but ultimately it's not having the strategic level effect, because our strategy, as I noted before, is not, it doesn't make any sense, it's not, we can't win with this strategy, and then also it's basically making our systems, these expensive big systems, like the USS Ford, $13 billion aircraft carrier, that went over budget, by the way, and time, it's making these systems vulnerable and sitting ducks, because the Iranians figured out our way of war, and they tailored their strategy for going after the weak spots in our way of war, and one of them are these complex, expensive systems like the carrier, like the F-35, and they have cheap, easily mass-produced systems like these missiles and the drones. So it's a mismatch, and it favors them.
And you know what's so strange is that we've spent the last 2 years testing this type of technology in Ukraine, and yet it seems like we didn't learn anything from it. Isn't that weird? And I saw a post, I didn't actually want to include it because I wasn't able to verify the claim, but it was claiming that Ukrainian, you know, leaders went over to see what America was doing in Iran and was just shocked at how little they were prepared for drone warfare. So it's like,
that is true.
We've spent $200 billion in Ukraine testing out this new equipment. We didn't learn anything about it. We didn't actually learn how to defend against it. I mean, this is stupidity on a whole new level.
Well, this is classic. This is classic deep state behavior. They're lavishly funded to such a point of absurdity. They don't, you know, they're like the Bourbons of old. They've learned nothing and forgotten nothing. You know, the Ukrainians, about three or four months ago, there was a NATO exercise in Europe where a group of Ukrainian drone operators defeated basically the bulk of NATO's army in this mock attack using drones only. They were able to stop tank formations. They were able to go after heavy armor. They were able to go after infantry units that were better supplied and trained. And they used drones doing it. And afterward, the Ukrainian instructors were in shock that that NATO was basically taken down by a ragtag group of drone operators, or at least they were stymied in this simulation. So you're seeing this again play out now in Iran, because the Iranians also watched and learned from the Ukraine war, but they learned from the successful part of the Ukraine war, the part in which both Ukraine and Russia figured out how to adapt drone warfare and to employ it in ways that would be effective for both of their sides, which is one of the reasons the war there's gone on for so long. The Iranians learned that. In fact, the Iranians were supplying most of the drones for the Russians, the Shahed drones. So, you know, our enemies have learned at a much faster clip how to fight modern wars than we have. And you're just watching us burn through all of these legacy systems that are infinitely more expensive than what the Iranians are using. And it's a race to depletion now, Harrison. And we're depleting faster than they are.
Right. And it seems like the attacks over this weekend, where you have Benjamin Netanyahu himself, you know, out on the street saying this is a war crime, this is terrible, what's happening here, clearly, we have not degraded Iran's ability to launch missiles to any sufficient degree. So that sort of, you know, exposes the lie that we've been telling since the first couple days of the war, that we've totally taken out their missile barrages. We always knew that was fake, but now it's sort of undeniable. Again, how does that change the calculus here? Clearly, Iran has not been degraded to any sufficient degree. What we're doing is not working. Are we going to be changing tactics, or are we just so bullheaded we're just going to keep doing the same thing and keep lying about it?
We can't change tactics because we're limited by our technology and the way our force is structured. You see, this is the problem also. We have a $1 trillion basically defense budget, but one of the reasons it's so ridiculously expensive and yet it doesn't get the results we need against an enemy that should be easy to deal with like Iran is because the entire system is structured in a very rigid way. And the people who run it are not innovative thinkers, because the people who reach the top of these bureaucracies in the Pentagon and in the intelligence community, these are political people. They are people who know how to play the DC game. So they're not going to be listening to people like me, and if they hear people like me, they're going to run me out of town, which is exactly what happened in my career in DC. They ran me out because I was considered too much of a red teamer. I was too much of a doomer. And so they don't want to hear it. So our system is very rigid and it is calcified, and yet we keep pouring money into it thinking that that's the solution. But as we're seeing, what the real solution is, you need to have people who can think, who can apply sound understanding of the strategic environment and figure out what systems we really need and what systems are just holdovers from the Cold War that are wastes of money. We don't do that. We just keep giving money to them and they keep doing the same thing over and over again, hoping it'll yield different results. This is now the third major Middle East war this country has been in, and the third one that we are losing at the strategic level. I don't know what it's going to take to wake Washington up.
Yeah, it really is depressing when you put it that way, but you're exactly right. I mean, yeah, we are 3 weeks into yet another losing Middle East war. And, you know, you said earlier that it's not existential for us, but it is sort of becoming existential for us, right? I mean, the targeting of the energy infrastructure, I mean, that's existential for everybody in the world, right? I mean, so this is quickly spiraling out of hand, just like we predicted it would. But this is becoming existential for us, right? And what do you think about, you know, it feels like we're teetering on the edge here, and it looks like Trump has sort of backed off his 48-hour time limit, but that seemed very much like, hey, you have 48 hours until I destroy the world. And that seems to be where we're at this point. I mean, am I wrong? Am I misinterpreting things?
Well, it was the weirdest ultimatum, because I think everybody has figured out that when Trump says things like that, he's not actually serious.
Right.
You know, the Iranians certainly don't believe it, because they're sitting there going, well, you could have done this to us, you know, years ago. Why haven't you? You could have done this to us in January. Why haven't you? Well, it's because everybody knows that it's an unserious statement by Trump. He's just trying to reset. Trump is more interested, because he's a media guy fundamentally. He's more interested in managing the perception, and he's more interested in trying to smooth the markets, because he understands that that's going to have real impacts on his political fortune here at home. And he is interested in actually obliterating anything in Iran. And so all of this is for show. The Iranians have called his bluff. Also, the very key thing here is Trump was floating this morning, hey, we're going to do negotiations. And the Iranians are saying, we're never talking to you again, because the last two times you wanted negotiations, you started a war within the day that you said you wanted them. I think what's going on is Trump is again using negotiations as a ploy to try to buy time for the markets to not go crazy, and also to buy time for U.S. Marines to get into position, where he will then in the coming weeks, I believe, order the next round of escalation, which will probably be a horrifically failed U.S. Marine landing in one of three places along the coastline of Iran. And I'm beginning to suspect it's the naval base in the southern part of Iran that's along the Persian Gulf, because it's the only part of Iran that is exposed to U.S. naval power, because Harrison, our Navy won't go anywhere near the Strait of Hormuz, which is one of the reasons why prices are so high for oil and why ships can't get through unless they're Chinese flagged.
Right. So on that note, what do you think is the purpose of the 5,000 Marines? And that's in addition to, you know, other bodies that have been moved in. It seemed like it would be a little bit of a suicide mission, try to take something like Karg Island. Of course, everybody
references. It's going to be his Gallipoli. That's what this is going to be.
Exactly. So, yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, if it was me, I might send those 5,000 Marines to help Israel against Hezbollah. I mean, where do you think they're being sent, and what do you think the most efficient use of them will be?
Well, the most efficient use of them would be to keep them at sea, out of range, and to, you know, only deploy them as a contingency if, say, one of our pilots gets shot down over hostile territory, we would mount a rescue mission, or if we want to help evacuate U.S. embassies that haven't yet been fully evacuated in the region, or to maybe help shore up defenses at one of our targeted bases in the region. The last thing we want to be doing is mounting some kind of, you know, harebrained landing anywhere along the coastline of Iran, which is totally hardened and has a kill box, basically a perfect kill box around it. Now, people keep saying, you know, CIA is in Balochistan, which is sort of this breakaway component of southern Iran. They're a different ethnic group. They used to be an independent country until the 20th century. Then they were integrated, and now they want independence again. So there's a lot of rumors that CIA has inserted themselves covertly there, and they're ginning up separatist movements there, and basically the Marines could land at this Iranian naval base, which is in that region of Balochistan in Iran, and they would basically be able to have friendlies coming in from the backside while we landed at the front door. That to me is all very fanciful. I'm reminded of the Bay of Pigs,
right,
you know, planning and all the promises made to Kennedy, and they all completely went out the window on day one. So I don't buy for a second that that is a realistic outcome. I think what will likely happen is whether we land there in the southern part of Iran, or if we actually try to break into the Strait of Hormuz and land at Karg, I think you're going to witness a slaughter of some of our best young men and women. Because the Marines, while they are one of the most lethal fighting forces conventionally in the world, they are not, I don't believe, and this gets back to the Ukraine issue, they are not doctrinally prepared for the kind of attack that they would be subjected to. They're not going to be fighting Iranian Marines. It's not going to be Marine versus Marine, or even tanks versus troops. It's going to be 88,000 or more drones swarming you in endless waves. And when those don't, when those are gone, they're going to be sending, the Iranians are going to be sending missiles, and they're going to be sending possibly hypersonic weapons. All of these things, our Marines are not able to defend against. It's just too much. Any more than the Russians could at the start of the war when they tried to take Kyiv, and it was a complete disaster because they weren't prepared doctrinally for the kind of war that the Ukrainians were going to begin, you know, waging against them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that would be another reason I would think that, you know, at least in the Lebanon-Israeli border, there's Hamas or Hezbollah commandos, that there'd actually be some infantry on infantry fighting. Whereas Iran, yeah, it just looks like they'd be.
I don't think we're going to get involved with Lebanon. I don't think that's on the table. I don't think we. Logistically, everything seems to be geared toward the center of gravity being in the Persian Gulf. I really would be surprised if we put a large force, in Lebanon. We might, but I would be surprised. The Israelis, though, are getting their clocks cleaned in Lebanon.
Right.
I've been tracking, and it's just crazy because yet again, Hezbollah didn't open up this front. They did.
Right.
The Israelis opened up this front. They kicked in the door, and it turns out there's a lot of nasty stuff waiting for them. And they're sending in their Merkava main battle tanks, which is supposedly this great system. It's a big tank and whatever. And, the Hezbollah has subjected those tanks to what they're calling the Merkava massacre. Countless numbers of these tanks have been just destroyed, obliterated, to use a word, because the Hezbollah was prepared for the kind of conventional armor attack the Israelis were going to employ, even though the Israelis should have known better because they also saw the Ukraine war and they've been witnessing the way wars are going. I have no idea why they were sending in armored units to punch through these urban areas. It never works. And so, you know, the whole system is collapsing around the Israeli-U.S. alliance, and it's partly because we were not prepared for this kind of a war.
Right, right. And here's just completely insane map from Nate B_Panic on X. U.N. Blue Line, so where are the U.N. forces? And it just shows, I mean, one out of every five Lebanese people has been displaced. Every red dot is an area of evacuation. So this is the border of Lebanon, and you can see, I mean, they are – rapidly taking almost a quarter of the country in just a purely aggressive attack. And then this was, I referenced this earlier, but this is the actual story here. Quick question for you. How are both of these true? It says the war was triggered when Hezbollah launched rockets at Israel on the 2nd of March. After near daily Israeli airstrikes on the country since November 2024 ceasefire. So it's like, okay, Hezbollah started the battle after an entire year of airstrikes. It's like, this is the type of reporting we're trying to wrap our minds around here. It's just insane. Yeah.
Well, and it shows you the level of censorship that exists even in the West, outside of Israel. The Israeli control over our media networks is very strong. And they are shaping the narrative. They're very committed to that. And the Trump administration is committed to helping them do that. You know, I have had major, you know, interviews canceled in the last week or so because, you know, nobody wants to talk about the things that I'm talking about, which is fine. But ultimately, you cannot fight reality. You can ignore it for a period of time, but the Israelis can penetrate into Lebanon. But I have the same thing with the U.S. military in Iran. We can penetrate into the country. We can land people there. Can we hold that territory, though? Can we stay there and dictate terms on the ground? I don't believe under current conditions we can. I think it's going to be a very costly endeavor, Harrison, and I think it's going to get a lot of people killed who didn't need to be, and I think it's going to end in a strategic defeat, like I said, of the United States. And in the case of Israel, I think you're witnessing in Lebanon, there's a strategic defeat going on there too.
So what's the outcome of this? I mean, it's going to have to be nuclear weapons, right? I mean, it sounds like all of these things are boiling to a point. America has no off-ramp. We're only escalating. We don't have the ability to escalate on our time.
We have no control.
Right.
We have no control, Harrison.
That's how it feels.
This is an Israeli operation. This is not being decided by Trump. He's going along with it for, you know, multiple reasons. Some of them above board. They're just a very close ally, and some of them not so above board that we don't have to get into here. But ultimately the president of the United States is not the one driving the ship. He is at best a co-pilot. And he is deferring a lot to the people who are driving this thing, which are the current government of Israel, and unfortunately the current government of Israel are deeply fanatical ideologues.
Right.
They are no different, in my opinion, Harrison, than the fanatical ideologues in the Islamic, you know, the Islamist world. They're two sides of the same coin at this point. And you ask where it's going. I think that the IDF has assessed, my understanding is, that if the Americans did try to land troops in Iran, it's going to fail under current conditions. Trump is going to get cold feet then. He's going to try to end the war. And at that point, the Israelis are going to either threaten or follow through on dropping some kind of nuclear weapon or weapons on Iran to end the threat once and for all. And we will have in America no say over that, and we will have in America no capability to basically deflect from the fallout, you know, both literal and metaphorical from those Israeli actions.
Right. Well, and I totally agree with you. Clearly, Trump is not in the driver's seat in this regard, and he's really kind of being humiliated repeatedly when he demands Israel not do something, and they go out and do it. It's really, you know, it doesn't look good where he loses face with all of that. But yeah, it seems like even Israel is sort of at the end of the rope and not sure what to do. So it's not like Israel is just like, you know, in charge and driving things forward. As you point out, their incursions into Lebanon are not going well. Guardian has a story. Israel faces stiff Hezbollah resistance as it attempts to push deeper into Lebanon. So they're not really, they don't really have a handle on this thing either, which is why I'm worried that, you know, in an act of desperation, they're going to reach for that final solution of nuclear weapons.
Oh, I think it's coming. Yeah. I think it's coming at this point. I put it at a probably 50 to 60% chance that there's going to be someone backing off nukes during in the next coming weeks of this conflict. I don't see how, even if Trump, like I said, even if he tacos out, which I'm all for, hey, let's do it. I'd love Taco Tuesday.
You mean when he declares victory and we win and get out of the Middle East on a because we want to, yes.
Right, that's right. Even if he were to do that, there's no guarantee the Iranians are going to stand down because, you know, President Pezeshkian, who's the Iranian president, he said a week ago, he said, we have to now bloody the Americans to such a point that they never try something like this again, which, whether you like the Iranian regime or not, and I can't stand the regime there, it is a very rational response given all that has been done. You know, they're trying to figure out regime survival and how they keep the American juggernaut from trying this again. That's a very rational response. They're going to try to basically prevent us from having power projection in the region, which is where this is headed one way or the other. It's just a question of how much it's going to burn us on the way out. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah. And, you know, Israel just struck the Syrian capital over the weekend. They bomb Iraq pretty regularly. They bomb Lebanon, as we just read, since 2024. No response. So, you know, Iran is looking forward. And if they don't win this in a really decisive way, that's their future, being periodically terror bombed by Israel and not being able to respond to it. Right. They can see it's happening in their neighbors. They don't want that to happen to them. And so, of course, the nuclear weapon discussion involves Dimona and the attacks this weekend on the Dimona, totally not a nuclear site, according to the Israelis. And they're sort of not even like running with that anymore. They basically admit now that they have nukes because Iran is bombing Dimona. So I want to get your take on that. I still want to get into what's going on with the USS Gerald Ford. And because there's no factual information about that I can find and trust, whether it was a laundry room
fire. That's the tell.
Right. What's happening is embarrassing probably for the United States government, so they're keeping wraps on it. So I want to get into that. I want to get into Dimona. And we got to get into Diego Garcia. Were they really bombed by Iran? And if that's the case, how does that change the calculus for Europe, knowing that they're at risk of Iranian bombs? Or was it a false flag attack? We'll get into that as well. More on the other side with my guest, Brandon Weikert. Follow him on X at WeTheBrandon1945.com. The book is Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, and we'll be right back.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have God for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So, we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. You found it, the tip of the spear. It is the Alex Jones Show.
I hear people.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Should be back tomorrow, we hope. He's doing important stuff behind the scenes. My guest is Brandon Weikert. Follow him at WeTheBrandon1945.com. That's 19, then spelling out the words, 45.com. His book's called The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, and you can find it all at TheWeikertReport.com. Now, I forgot you have a limited time with us here, so I appreciate you, giving your time to us already, but we don't have an infinite amount of time. So what's the biggest story out of some of the ones I just laid out? Diego Garcia, can you explain that to us? What the heck happened? The Wall Street Journal has a story. Iran brings Europe into range with missiles fired at Diego Garcia. They're saying that it was the first time they've launched a intermediate range ballistic missile, one that can fly far enough to hit much of Europe. Now, is that real? Did it really happen? And what does that mean? Because if that's true, that means that Iran could feasibly be, bombing Buckingham Palace, and the UK has no defenses for it at all. They would just have to say, everybody get under your desk and wait for the bombs to fall. That's a major change in the, landscape of this war. What do you know about the attack on Diego Garcia this weekend?
It's very possible that they have in Iran developed a IRBM type capability. They have a very robust missile capability that is evolving with every iteration. We've already witnessed this, in this war. We are told, game over, we won. And then Iran launches another missile fusillade that eviscerates, the Arab states or an American base or Israel.
Right.
So it is very possible that, this has been a very key thing for the Iranian strategy, is building out a robust ballistic missile capability. But it is also very possible, given the trajectory where this thing was launched, likely around or near, where it ended up going. There are a handful of Israeli Dolphin-class submarines that are likely near, within firing range of Iran. These have nuclear-tipped cruise missiles on them. It is likely also, though, that they have the capability to fire systems toward Diego Garcia in the other direction. I don't know for sure, because both possibilities are very real. But it wouldn't surprise me if maybe this was some sort of either false flag, or even it could be a misfire. I mean, we saw this in Ukraine, right? Where, the Ukrainians a few years ago claimed that the Russians fired a missile at Poland, and then the previous Polish government basically went back and was like, no, that was a Ukrainian air defense system that misfired and accidentally crossed into our border. Had we listened to Ukrainians, though, we'd be in World War III for the last 3 years with Russia. So it could be a misfire. But ultimately, I'm just very skeptical that the Iranians I'm very skeptical the Iranians would did that, because the Iranians have exercised a very effective control over escalation, I think far better than we have. They've only escalated so far when we escalate. They are counterpunching, basically, against America and Israel. So they didn't start really blowing up oil refineries in the Arab states and going after energy flows in the region until after Israel in particular started bombing Iran, their energy production. And so you see this sort of tit-for-tat escalation, which indicates to me actually a very professional, very smart and strategic and almost judicious rival we have in the Iranian military command structure. And so while they might have certainly tested this system and wanted to send us a message, hey, we can reach Diego Garcia, it's also very possible that this was something else.
I agree, and when you hear the details of it, to me it only gets more suspicious, because as you point out, you know, Iran isn't the one escalating here, and for them to reveal that they have the capability to hit Brussels or Paris or London, it's like you unveil that at the time that you need to unveil that. You don't just unveil that randomly. And so what it says is, Friday's missiles missed their target. One failed in flight. The other disappeared after a Navy destroyer launched SM-3 interceptors at them, U.S. officials said, but Tehran's ability to fire them demonstrated a more aggressive posture by the regime and the progress to the capacity to strike far beyond the Middle East. But of course, all this information came from Israel. Israel said the missiles fired at Diego Garcia had two stages. That suggests Iran might instead have adapted one of its purportedly civilian space launchers for military purposes. So we're getting the information from Israel. Nobody got hurt. The missiles didn't hit anything, but it was enough to let us know that they have the ability. So it's kind of like, all right,
not know that the Israelis were the single source of this.
I don't know if they were the single source, but they certainly are quoting the Israeli intelligence for information
here. Because I will tell you right now, just based on my conversations with people like Joe Kent in the last 48 hours, and also with people who, like Michael Scheuer, former CIA Bin Laden unit director, has a long experience dealing with the Israelis. The Israelis short-circuit our intelligence vetting process all the time.
Right.
They will basically parachute their intelligence into the laps of the AIPAC-funded politicians that work basically for them, rather than letting true intelligence get vetted by our very laborious collections vetting process. This is how we got into Iraq, by the way.
Yep.
And this is also, by the way, I think how we got into the 12-day war last year, because it was Israeli intelligence that did this. And then I think also this is how we are now here, because the president was relying almost exclusively on information from the Israeli intelligence services. Also, this incident in you know, with Diego Garcia sounds a little bit reminiscent of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, if I can just put my tinfoil hat on for a moment. And, you know, we know that this is standard operating procedure in situations like this. So I'm not convinced that the Iranians actually popped off an IRBM. They might very well have these systems, but I'm not convinced that, like you said, they revealed them willingly this early on in the game.
Yeah, and again, this would be a classic false flag attack. I mean, it comes from naval warfare, where you would run up a false flag and attack somebody and say, oh, it's the Portuguese doing that, when really it was the Spanish. I mean, classic, not nom de guerre, whatever the term they use, or ruse de guerre, right? So yeah, it's what you're saying is not really that conspiratorial. This is standard practice in military warfare for hundreds of years. Finally, just before you have to go, U.S. Navy nuclear aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford might be out of action for 14 months. That's the headline in 1945. What happened? Mm-hmm. What happened to our aircraft carrier? Were we hit? Was it the crew rebelling?
I think it was hit. I think that everything that I've been warning about, both at 1945 and at my previous employer, National Interest, everything that I've been warning about the carriers is coming true. And the Chinese are taking copious notes, because obviously if there is a Taiwan contingency, our carriers are going to be the tip of the spear. And the Chinese anti-access area denial capabilities are basically the Iranian capabilities on steroids. So our enemies are learning from this. I think that the carrier has probably been hit. I don't have any proof of that. I hope it was just a fire, but a laundry fire seems very odd. And if it was a laundry fire, as you note, it might very well have been, you know, sabotage, as William Shatner might say. So, any way you look at it, we lose a carrier now for 14 months. It's going to be longer, because there's only one shipyard in America that can do the kind of overhaul needed for that carrier. There's a backlog at that shipyard. And that basically what we found with all of our carriers going through these overhauls is you have to double the amount of time that you're given, because the shipyards can't handle the load they already have. Now you add in a highly complex military operation that's putting a lot of strain on the defense industrial base and those naval shipyards. We're not getting that carrier back anytime soon. That's why they're keeping the Nimitz now. They were going to decommission it, but now the old Nimitz is being, you know, old bucket of bolts is being kept operationalized for the next year. This country is not doing well. $1 trillion doesn't buy what it used to, Harrison. Our country is losing this war, and if we're not careful, we're going to lose another war, a bigger one possibly against China.
It should really just be a matter now of trying to cut our losses and get out while we can. I don't see any trajectory in which we turn this thing around and, you know, it becomes a rousing success. But that's my take. And, you know, I hope people in D.C. actually care about this country enough not to lead us down the path to ultimate destruction.
Well, Harrison, here's how you know that what I'm saying is correct. I just saw a clip when we were at the break of Trump is blaming Pete Hegseth now. He said Pete Hegseth was the first one who wanted to go. So to me, you know, we're told this is a win. We're winning. But victory has a thousand fathers and defeat is an orphan. Yet for some reason, the Trump administration, where they're supposedly having all these wins in Iran, victory seems to be an orphan. And that doesn't seem very rational to me. There's a lot of blame shifting. Clearly, everybody behind the scenes knows that we are losing. We've got into a really bad situation, a quagmire. And this time, unlike Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, there doesn't seem to be an exit ramp.
It is very dangerous, dangerous times, folks. Brandon J. Weicker, thank you so much for joining us.
Until we meet again, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And again, we the Brandon on X, 1945.com, theweikertreport.com as well. And again, I'd like to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. We recognized the genius of Brandon Weicker years ago, and we're always happy to welcome him on the show to describe the insanity of American foreign policy. Now everybody gets it. Now everybody wants Brandon on the show. So we're just so happy
Dr.
that.
Dr. Doom.
Well, hey, it's when you're right, you're right. And people are recognizing that. So absolutely incredible stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll see you next time. Okay. We still have a lot to talk about, folks. And again, the Iran war is not even just about the war in Iran right now. You've got the war in Lebanon. Obviously, you have the, you know, geopolitical machinations going on in the background. You also have what is being allowed and established because of the Iran war. Things like the introduction or the inclusion of AI systems in our military that, you know, sort of blurring the line between the military and the civilian, the government and the private. And the growth of Palantir as the White House comes out with a new framework on AI and just the infinite problems that comes along, that come along with that. This was a post from a French guy, I believe, but weirdly, this post has been visibility limited on X. So like I retweeted this, but if you go to my account, it doesn't show the retweet. It just, it says, you know, this tweet was marked visibility limited, but here's what it says. And I don't know why you would limit the visibility on this. It's not violent speech as far as I can understand. He says this, read carefully. I now consider it extremely likely that Iran will annihilate Israel. The process will certainly take between 4 and 10 months. Israel will not be wiped off the map, but it will no longer really be possible to live there. All strategic infrastructure, which is ultimately quite limited in number, will be very heavily damaged. The surviving Israelis will have to return home to Europe or the United States, mainly by boat, because airports can no longer be relied upon. And this is the thing, when you're talking about a landmass that's as small as Israel, all of their infrastructure is in a very small location. They only have the one, you know, like major airport, the Ben Gurion Airport. If that goes down, there's not a lot of other options for them. The desalination plants, the energy production plants, they have one concrete plant that services the entire country. You take these out, you can't live there anymore. You're going to have to leave. But I find it deeply, deeply ironic that Israel and Israelis are talking about fleeing. The people who are carrying out a genocide on the basis that this is their homeland are fleeing? That doesn't make any sense, does it? See, nobody else in the area has a Europe or an America to, quote, go back to, return home to. No, that's your home. You chose that as your home. You've killed 100,000 people to make that your home. That's your home now. It's a graveyard. It's a massacre site. But that's because that's how you made it. It wasn't that before you got there. Now it is. I think you have to stay there. I don't think you should be allowed to come back, to be honest with you. I think maybe we need cancellation of dual citizenship, right? It's just like, you got to suffer the consequences. You can't have this get out of jail free escape hatch where you get to light the whole region on fire and then jet back to America. No, I don't think we should be allowing that to happen. I do think that Israel is in a very tenuous circumstance, and really the danger is not all the Israelis fleeing, it's them using a nuclear weapon once and for all, and possibly the Samson option on top of it. Very dangerous situation we find ourselves in. Iran threatens to destroy region-wide infrastructure as Trump's 48-hour ultimatum ticks down, but he sort of backed off on that. Again, we have them saying that Iran is trying to talk, but Iran is saying, no, we're not, absolutely not. What are you even talking about? Iran has issued a statement denying President Trump's post in which he claimed U.S. and Iran have had productive conversations in the Iran war. Iran says, one, there's been no direct or indirect contact with President Trump. Two, President Trump is trying to buy time in the Iran war. Three, President Trump withdrew from power plant strikes after Iran's firm warning. Four, President Trump's comments are, quote, psychological warfare. Five, Hormuz will not return to pre-war conditions as long as psychological warfare continues. Iran has entirely denied all of President Trump's claims. And I, of course, am more leaning towards believing Iran. At the same time, who knows, man? Who knows? Is it really impossible to imagine that there's some Israeli guy claiming to be Iranian and pretending to negotiate with Trump? I mean, that might be where we're at. And when you really think about what was revealed by Joe Kent, I saw some people on X explaining this and sort of puzzling this out, and it looks like instead of trying to propagandize America into thinking this war is a good idea, all of the effort that went into, like, the first Iraq war or the second under George W. Bush or the Afghanistan invasion, all of that energy that went towards propagandizing the American people all went towards propagandizing Trump himself. And it's almost like they created a Truman's World reality bubble around Trump. And I don't think it would be that hard to do. I mean, you get the shows he watches to promote your talking points, and he doesn't have time to watch that much, and he only watches certain people, and it's very public who he watches. So you introduce information through those shows. He might then go and ask his advisors, who you also have ceded the information to. I mean, it's really not that hard to imagine, with all of the ability of, BB should be this guy. No, BB is this guy. Trump is Truman. We got the wrong face swap going on here. If only Trump was the controller. If only. No, BB Netanyahu is the controller. He's the one whispering things into the command structure, and the whole world is shifting to provide the illusion to Trump. That is what's happening. So is it out of the realm of possibility that Trump is being totally sincere when he's like, yeah, Iran said they want to negotiate? Who knows what information he's getting? Maybe somebody told him that. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the Iranians are lying, because the Iranians' stance comports with logic and everything else I know about this situation. Again, Iran is, it's not a choice for them. They are required to change the entire dynamic of the Middle East. So like I said before, if they stop short of completely obliterating America or Israel's ability to attack them, then it'll be what? Another 6 months, another year, maybe best case scenario, it's another 10 years. Regardless, this happens again in a certain amount of time. They are trying to change that cycle and remove themselves from that cycle, remove all of us really from that cycle. The mowing the lawn cycle that Israel engages in, where first they basically disarm their enemy and then they just routinely bomb civilians there just to keep them down, as they do in Syria, as they do in Lebanon, as they do in Gaza, and as they have done for decades on end. So Iran knows that's their future if they don't win this fight. I mean, it's been done. It's the wick has been lit and the dynamite is going to explode one way or another. And they understand that and are just acting as if that's true and not believing the lies of American Israel, which, again, maybe we could talk to them if we hadn't deliberately betrayed them every single time they're willing to talk to us. Again, it's our fault. It's our fault, and we deserve it. So it sucks, but that's just how it is. Joe Kent wrote this in response to Trump's announcement. So Trump early this morning wrote this: I am pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. Based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed, and constructive conversations, which W-I-T-C-H, really? Really, President Trump? Okay. Which will continue throughout the week. I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. Thank you for your attention in this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So it almost seems like he expected Iran to go along with it just so they could get that 5-day break. She'd be like, oh, yeah, that totally, you're right, Trump, we are negotiating. But again, he doesn't just say, like, there's been contact. He says, quote, in-depth, detailed, and constructive conversations. With who, Trump? With Mossad? Pretending to be Iranian? Is that what's happening? I don't know, but I really wouldn't put it past him. Trump doesn't know. He don't know what the hell's going on. All they have to do is tell him, oh, yeah, Iran's talking to us. Yeah, they really, we're having in-depth and detailed conversations. Trump, it's going really well. You should tweet that out. And then he does. And it's just like, is any of it true? Does he even know if any of it's true? I mean, we know what Israel has done before to get us into wars. USS Liberty comes to mind. Like, once you understand the USS Liberty, everything's on the table. Everything. Right? Once you understand that we're dealing with people who have already in the past demonstrated an ability to kill hundreds of American sailors, bomb one of our ships outright. I mean, the bomb on Diego Garcia would look like nothing. It's like blowing your nose compared to what they did to the USS Liberty. So you don't think they'd go, look, we fire one or two missiles towards Diego Garcia. We make sure they don't hit anybody so nobody gets angry at us. But then we tell people, look, Iran can hit Europe. You all have to get involved. I mean, you don't think that's the type of operation they would carry out? Very little risk, practically no risk, really, especially when you know that the mainstream media in America and the politicians in America are on the Israeli payroll and will cover up bad news about Israel. There's no risk. The only risk that there would be is exposure, and you know you have the people that would expose you on your side and willing to lie for you. So why would they care? Right? Hell, they got away with USS Liberty, didn't they? Everybody knows now the USS Liberty was deliberately targeted by Israel. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, hell, we're talking about Iranian terror attacks from 47 years ago. Let's see, what would 40 so? Maybe just a little bit before that, right? So these things are not out of the question that Israel would carry out something like that. Of course, the propaganda operation that they're already carrying out around Trump isn't much more elaborate than, you know, what we just described, that maybe Trump really is being told that Iran is talking to him when they're not. I don't know, but that's sort of where we're at. Like, that's the dynamic we have to understand and that we have to deal with. Like, we have a president right now that exists in an illusion. He exists in a world that has been created for him and him specifically, like Truman, to keep him in a permanent state of confusion, where he's acting on things that have never happened. He's taking advice that never actually came from where it said it came from. Like, he is being controlled by people who are dictating his reality to him. That is literally where we are at this point. And it's a combination strategy where you have Fox News and Mark Levin and Sean Hannity all participating in this as key components of the universal reality bubble that Trump is currently imprisoned within. And I really, and again, that, I don't know, man. I mean, the other option is Trump is just evil. Like, that, these are the options. And maybe just for my own sanity, but I genuinely believe that Trump was the real deal at a certain point. I think he still is to a certain point. When he's talking about anything other than Iran, you can see it. You know, the State of the Union he gave recently was like back to old form Trump. He was great. It was amazing. It was like, wow, where's this guy been? So I have to believe this is actually a King Theoden situation where the worm tongues are have him under a curse and he's, you know, banishing his best friends while listening to his worst enemies. I have to believe that somewhere in there, underneath the decrepit mask of King Theoden, is the real guy, is the real man who's in there, and he's just been kept away from us and imprisoned in this reality bubble. Maybe not. Maybe he's just evil. Maybe he's just destroying America on purpose and knows exactly what he's doing. I almost have to believe that it's all a trick, because otherwise, we're in an even worse position than we would be otherwise. I mean, if Trump really is just destroying America through this war in Iran and he knows exactly what he's doing, that might be the worst possibility, because then we really don't have an ability to wake anybody up from it.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealchemstore.com.
RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity. The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. It is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
How would you hold the data for 75 years, all of the clinical data, for 75 years from these if you were trying to be transparent? Tell me why.
This is a person who was vaccinated four times by Pfizer, 1 year since vaccination, tumors emerged, person was dead within a month. We got three biopsies out of them, one postmortem. All of them have SV40 and the origin of replication from the Pfizer vaccine.
SV40, or simian virus 40, reared its ugly head back in 1960 when scientists spotted it lurking in rhesus monkey kidney cell cultures that were being held to whip up polio vaccines. SV40, a tumor-making machine, has the large T antigen, a molecular wrecking ball that smashes into cellular control systems like P53 and retinoblastoma protein pathways, turning normal cells into rogue cancer factories. Fast forward to 2025, and messengers from a myriad of professions are shouting from the rooftops about SV40's presence in the COVID vaccines.
These vaccines are not vaccines. They are, in fact, a gene therapy based. This genomic integration, as the scientific literature makes clear, can lead to cancer development, immune system disruption, and more. The sheer levels of contamination detected, up to 145 times permissible limit in some cases, are extraordinary and far beyond what should be allowed in any medicinal product. in my work as an oncologist in the UK, I started to see a disturbing trend as early as February 2022. Patients who had been cancer-free for many years were suddenly relapsing with aggressive explosive cancers shortly after receiving booster doses of the COVID-19 vaccine.
I'll tell you a good story.
Okay.
I have three friends. All three of them had stage 4 cancer. All three of them don't have cancer right now at all. And they had some serious stuff going on.
And what did they take?
Jesus. They took some, what you've heard they've taken.
Ivermectin.
Fenbendazole.
These three advanced cancer patients experienced remission in two cases, complete remission, and in one case, near remission, for an extended period of time, years after initiating this fenbendazole protocol, and none of them received chemo either, right? So this was with, it was in combination, a few were with a surgery, some did receive, a brief dose of radiation, but in general, this fenbendazole was linked to extraordinarily, accelerated tumor reductions in a pretty short period of time with extended survival outcomes with no evidence of disease.
Yeah, I was off their charts, 1,498.
Yeah, the chart didn't even go that high.
That is something else.
That was December 31st. I took my first course of ivermectin on my birthday, February 2nd. February 11th, my CEA was down to 180.
Raise that up a little bit. Wow.
Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells, and it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information.
We have a new product in at theellisshowstore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity with no letdown and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, it can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, at thealexhostore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this and then looking at how they're organically derived and how each ingredient itself is a game changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at thealexshowstore.com.
Now, back to our program.
The answer to 1984. Is 1776. It's Matt Bracken. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Well, we're back, and we would be facing Armageddon in a couple of hours, but our president decided to make believe that there were negotiations that were succeeding with Iran, and that he, out of the goodness of his heart, he's going to give them five more days. Now, the Iranians, it's interesting, immediately said, there's no such talks. And between the two of them, I would trust the Iranians 100% of the time on something like that. You know, our history with negotiations and Iran are not exactly spectacular. Both last year in June at the start of the 12-day war and this time on February 28th, you know, a day that will live in infamy, as FDR said about Pearl Harbor, we used negotiations as a ruse, as a trick to, you know, allow the Iranians to have some sense that they were safe, at least until the negotiations were over. And then did these, they call it decapitation, but it's actually assassination, sneak attack bombing raids, but the kind where this is the Israeli style of an assassination is where you'll drop a 2,000-pound bomb in the middle of an apartment building, you know, with dozens of people, many families, because you think one guy might be in there. And to the Israelis, that's perfectly acceptable, you know, because they're the chosen people and they're on a mission from Yahweh. So if you got to blow up entire apartment buildings to get one guy that you think might be there, that's fine. And that's the kind of war that Trump has signed on for, along with Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, I think that Trump's credibility, it hasn't been strong for quite a while, but currently it's absolutely been like following a schizophrenic, you know, around who's spouting just delusional ideas. He'll put out a Truth Social post and then an hour later contradict it, you know, and then an hour later go another 90 degrees off in that direction. And he acts like he's never changed anything. You know, these are not the actions of a man with a sound mind at this point. His defenders, and I was one for many, many years, his defenders will say, well, you know, it's 5D chess. It's the Sun Tzu, Don Tzu. You know, if you don't know what the hell you're doing, then your enemy can't know what you're doing. But this is, you know, not a joking matter, because his deadline, if he was to enforce it, would have essentially set off a path to Armageddon. And I watched Brandon Weikert on last hour with Harrison. And, you know, he's a subject matter expert on this. He thinks it's going to end up with nukes. And I have a hard time, you know, wondering, that probably could be. That could happen. It could end up with an Israeli nuke on Tehran. And that still won't open the Strait of Hormuz. Now, I sent the show an email with some images on it. I don't know if they're you know, set up or anything, but you know, this I have a theory that the reason that he called the truce, the ceasefire, has nothing to do with the market manipulation. People are saying, "Oh, look what time he put it out. It's to calm the markets until, you know, Friday." And then it'll be timed with a marine invasion after close of business Friday, something like that. I have my own theory, and I posted something on Substack and X today about it. I think that there was a point where, after this 48-hour deadline was put out, that it would probably most likely be Vice President Vance and Secretary of Defense Marco Rubio going to Trump and saying, you have to stop this. Now, Susie Wiles, you know, she's trying to get the sympathy vote with her early stage breast cancer. But she's still the gatekeeper for Trump. Susie Wiles is a hardcore Christian Zionist. She was the campaign manager for Bibi Netanyahu a couple years ago in Israel, as if Israel needs help from an American in figuring out how to do, you know, polling and advertisement allocation, things like that. As if that's a subtle form of a recruitment. You bring Susie Wiles over, you wine her and dine her. Everybody that she meets, from her taxi driver to the guy that's, you know, fixing the copying machine, is a Holocaust survivor or who's somebody who's lost a son in, you know, fighting the Palestinians in Gaza. So this is essentially a slow motion, long-term recruitment. And, you know, wedding or unwedding, Susie Wiles beat Benjamin Netanyahu, Ted Cruz, who said the main thing he ever wanted to do in the Senate was to protect Israel. Lindsey Graham, who wants to do another Iwo Jima, you know, with the Marines, even though more Marines died on Iwo Jima than we're even proposing to send. So I think that, and if you can put up number 11, that's the Kent, Vance, and Rubio. I think that they're like the only two people that can probably penetrate the Susie Wiles, Oval Office boycott. I don't think that, you know, Joe Kent, he said he was not in any part of this decision making. This decision was not made in the White House. I believe they were down at Mar-a-Lago. Recently, Ted Cruz, I think yesterday on the Sunday show, he said that he was with Trump all day on February 7th. That's the last day of negotiations. And Ted Cruz, and he's admitting it, he's proud of it. He encouraged Trump to pull the trigger on a sneak attack to go along with Israel. You know, Trump previously and said, and Rubio has said, we were just presented with the fact that Israel was going to do this attack. And if we didn't go along with it, they might hit our bases too. So we decided to like double up and go along with the Israeli Pearl Harbor of Iran. And on the first hour of the strikes, we killed almost 200 schoolgirls. I mean, that's the kind of a war that we've gotten ourselves involved in. And this might play in America. This might play on Fox News, you know, with the boomer neocon set. But in the rest of the world, this is an absolute disaster for us. We are now tied at the hip with Israel. At the hip. Anything Israel does in Gaza, in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran, America is now fully partnered. Fully partnered. And Trump said that he was, you know, not informed about the Israeli strikes on the Iranian gas fields. And today, Israel just said, screw you, we're going to do it again. You think you're going to find an off-ramp? There's no way. If you can put up number 3, that's Israel's concept of victory. A big problem is America and Israel have two very different concepts of what victory means here. I don't know how many people remember the movie Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome, but there's like a cage match where the house bad guy it combo is called the Master Blaster, and the little evil dwarf up on the mast on the blaster's shoulders, I have the Israeli flag, and I have there's America. Just do what you're told. The Israel's concept of victory over Iran is to turn Iran into a failed, destroyed state. A Libya, a Syria, Gazified, Lebanon, Iraq, a failed warlord state, which cannot put up any kind of resistance to Israel. These states, such as Iraq and Syria, Israel can fly right over. No problem. In fact, they can do refueling with tankers, American mid-air refueling tankers. So anybody that says, well, why don't we just, you know, stop cooperating? It's our tankers that allow the Israeli jets to get to Iran to drop the bombs. You know, so Trump is kind of trying to play a double game. Oh, I didn't know Israel was going to do these latest attacks. So today he comes out with his ceasefire. He claims there's negotiations going on. The Iranians immediately said, no, they're not. You're lying. Why would we negotiate with people to assassinate the negotiators? You know, like the scene in Braveheart where the nobles agree to meet the British, the English, at, you know, some rural house, and then the English soldiers come in and hang all the Scottish nobles. That's what we have done twice. Last June and this February 28th. If you know, there's a reason why countries don't assassinate ambassadors or opposing kings or presidents or negotiation teams. Eventually, every war has to come to an end. And if you are in the business of assassinating the opposite possible negotiators, then nobody's going to negotiate with you. They're going to figure you're just being set up for another assassination. You know, I'm personally really sick of this master blaster thing where we're the big dumb goon wearing the mask for this evil little dwarf, you know, Bibi Netanyahu and his third temple messianic lunatics. If you can put up number two, that's Joe Kent. Joe Kent is the first one who refused to wear the mask. Joe Kent said, I have to call it the way I see it. I'm not going to be a subservient goon following the orders of an evil dwarf. I'm not going to do it. And for that, they're trying to destroy him with false allegations. Oh, there was already an ongoing investigation. It's like every time somebody defects from some country, they say, oh, he was being investigated for embezzlement, or yeah, we were looking at child porn on his computer. It's so patently obvious that it's a lie. He's the one man in this administration with integrity. I'm hoping somebody like Tulsi Gabbard will be the next to go. But it's my theory that Vance or Rubio, you know, Susie Wiles can't keep the Secretary of State or the Vice President from seeing the President. And I think that after this lunatic 48-hour deadline, they went to him and said, if you do this, the world economy is going to be destroyed. They're already out of gasoline in Australia, Vietnam, Malaysia, Japan, out of gasoline. People won't be able to go to work. You know, the next thing that's going to happen is food shortages. You know, we're eating the 2025 harvest. The 2026 harvest should be going in now, but farmers can't get fertilizer. I mean, and it's, you know, these are all fungible commodities on the world market. So if a farmer in Kansas or Indiana is having a hard time paying for fertilizer, imagine in Africa or Asia, there's no fertilizer to be had, which means the harvest could be off by a third or a half, assuming it's even planted and assuming that they can afford diesel to run their tractors. You know, this is an unfolding disaster. Michael Yon's been calling this for years, and now it's actually happening. If the Strait of Hormuz was opened today, there will probably still be a global depression because this, like a boa constrictor that ate a too big, you know, pig, this is going to now have to move through the economy for the next year at least, if the Strait of Hormuz was open today. And the whole world knows who did this. If you can stick up number 12, it's the Strait of Hormuz graph. It shows how many ships should be going through, you know, on an average day. You can see where on 28 of Feb, then it falls off a cliff. And the whole world knows who did this. Outside of American media, the rest of the world isn't saying, well, you know, America and Iran, they've been at war for 47 years. So Mark Levin and Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham, they're all right. The rest of the world is saying, America, what the hell have you done? I mean, this is crazy. This is why Scott Bessent is saying we're going to lift sanctions on Iranian oil. The same time we're bombing their cities, we're saying, please get more oil to the world market to avert this catastrophe that we caused. And it's not just oil, it's gas. Since America blew up the Nord Stream pipeline to cut off Europe from Russia, it's been boom times for Texas and Louisiana selling LNG. But LNG by ship costs four times more than LNG by pipeline. It's very expensive to liquefy, send a ship across the ocean, where an LNG tanker, unlike a petroleum tanker, it, no matter how tight you try to make it, it's losing gas every day. You can't just like park an LNG tanker somewhere and wait for the market to calm down.
because it's losing a percentage every day. Just lost at all the many joints and the thousands of pipes. So we're now benefiting from the rest of the world suffering. So when people say, Matt, who cares about the Strait of Hormuz? We don't care. We're covered. We got gas and oil. But the rest of the world is now looking at us like pirates and killers, mafia, benefiting while other countries are going to completely go off the edge. I mean, into starvation. And they're going to say America and Israel are equal partners. That's why Joe Kent took off the mask. He wouldn't be the slave to the evil dwarf. He refused to do it. And I just wish more Americans would refuse to do it, or at least see what's going on and not just say, oh my gosh, this war is so terrible. I paid $4 at the pump for gasoline. In Vietnam, Australia, Japan, there's no gasoline. You think it's bad here? The rest of the world is pointing the finger at us and saying, Trump, you did this. You did this. And I hope that there's more resignations at this point. You know, Trump, I think, is trying to like play this 5-day game, but the Iranians aren't going to play. They're not going to open up the Strait of Hormuz. There's no way. And, you know, right now, let's see that's the number four, the Iranian toll booth. If you can stick that one up. So right now, oil is getting out of the Persian Gulf, but it's only if you go through these two islands that are inside of Iranian territorial waters. If you try to cross that main channel where the skull and crossbones is, you risk being sunk, attacked, mined, whatever. So you have to drive through this narrow channel. It's deep, but narrow, close enough for the Iranians to talk to you on like a handheld radio and make sure you've paid the toll. I've heard it's $2 million a ship. I think it's more likely it's like 10% of the value of the cargo, because every ship is so different. You can't count 100,000 ton ultra large crude carrier with a 400,000 ton and both charge them both 2 million. I've heard it's 10% of the value of the cargo deposited in China, in Juan. And when that's cleared, you can go through. And so we're so desperate on the economic level that we're letting this happen. We're allowing it to happen. Yet at the same time, and if you can put up number seven, that's the U.S. Navy no-go zone. We can't even get close to Iran right now. Inside of that arc where I wrote U.S. Navy danger zone, we don't have any ships. There may be a submarine, not through the Strait of Hormuz, though. It's shallow and narrow. A submarine going through there is like trying to sneak an elephant, you know, through your bedroom. It's not going to work. So we have fled the Persian Gulf. The Fifth Fleet headquarters in Bahrain, that's at the top of that little peninsula halfway along the coast of the Persian Gulf. The Navy's gone, skeleton crew. So the whole deal with the Gulf states was, let us have bases and we'll protect you from Iran. But we couldn't. When we started this war with assassination sneak attacks during negotiations, they fired at our bases and we fled. So much for protection. You know, and up there in the very corner of that map, if you see where it says Karg Island, that is 750 miles from where our ships can even potentially operate. So I'm still watching mainstream media just to see how they're covering some of these topics. And I have people you would think are pretty smart, like on Bannon this morning. What's his name? Eric Bolling. He's, you know, making a comeback by going on Bannon and having a podcast. They're talking still about Karg Island, like the Marines at Karg Island. Karg Island is off the table for the Marines. It's 500 miles. Can you put up number six? It's the one that says 500 miles to Karg Island. Our ships don't even go near the Strait of Hormuz because it would be a shooting gallery for drones, missiles, torpedoes, unmanned vessels, you know, unmanned drone boats. And Trump at one point was saying, you got to just show some guts and drive your you know, 12 knot ship that takes miles to turn. You're just supposed to run the gauntlet. Our own destroyers won't go in there. Our destroyers will not go in there. So you people that are talking about Karg Island are assuming that the Boxer and the Tripoli, when the Boxer and the Tripoli ever arrive, are just going to drive through there and drop Marines off. They're still showing video of amphibious ships dropping off, you know, forget the nomenclature, it's like a floating APC, as if they're going to invade Karg Island like it's Grenada. These people are out of their minds. This is why people like Brandon Weikert that was on last hour, you've got to listen to us because the talking heads on TV have no clue what they're talking about. And, you know, there's a joke around that what's the first Navy that refused to help at the Strait of Hormuz? It's the U.S. Navy, because our admirals, I am sure, have told up the chain of command, hell no, that's a suicide run. That's the charge of the Light Brigade. You know, that's like sending tanks into Ukraine or Ukrainian tanks into the Donbass. Ships today are nothing but a big fat target unless they're 1,000 kilometers away from the missile threat. I mean, people are talking as if it's still like 1992 or Desert Storm or Operation Iraqi Freedom. Those days are over. They're over. And when we come back in the next segment, I want to, you know, a long, long time ago, I was an officer in SEAL team and, you know, we trained and practiced for all these kind of scenarios. And I'd like to talk about some of the potential, missions that are probably going to happen. You know, we're not going to send ships through the Strait of Hormuz. That I promise you. But what are we likely to do and what kind of operations might be happening right now? When we come back, I'd like to talk about that. And I hope it'll be a little bit more convincing than these idiots still on the mainstream media.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
We have a new product in at thealexjonesstore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity with no letdown and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, at thealexjonesstore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this and then looking at how they're organically derived and how each ingredient itself is a game changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Now, back to our program.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster.
and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have dies for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones. And now, your host, Matt Bracken.
Okay, in this segment, I want to talk about some of the military options because, you know, there's almost a truism in these kind of things. You don't send aircraft carriers and, you know, thousands of men, dozens of ships halfway around the world, C-17s, B-52s, all of our fighter aircraft and air tankers, and then just do nothing. I think that, you know, it's not a bluff. February 28th showed that there's a momentum that builds up, and eventually, everything tilts towards using the tools that have been sent there. And we saw that. The proof that this was a pulled out of its ass, you know, not thought out mission is that the Marines are now just, you know, going to be arriving. And we just sent the Boxer from San Diego. Do you know how long that's going to take? You know, these ships, even at full speed, are not exactly Greyhounds, these amphibious ships. So that task force, amphibious ready group, and the Tripoli amphibious ready group, they're on their way. Now, will they put Marine boots on the ground as soon as the Tripoli arrives with essentially 1,200 combat Marines that go ashore? Now, there's a lot more support, Navy and Marine, on the ships, but of the actual, you know, rucksack, rifleman, grunt Marines, you're only talking 1,200. So anybody that even is still talking about Karg Island, throw that out the window. They're idiots. They have no idea what they're talking about. Now, if you put up, which map is it here? It's map number one, the potential USMC landing sites in Iran. Now, obviously already just forget about Karg Island. That's number one on this map, so it's crossed out. Other people are saying, well, what if we just take some of these islands that are right in the Strait of Hormuz? You know, couldn't we like put a really dangerous, high-powered Marine team with all kind of high-tech missiles on that island, and then we could control the Strait of Hormuz? Well, everything is wrong with this theory, and you'll never hear an actual planner talking about this because, number one, what could they put on that island that wouldn't just be destroyed with 1,000 missiles and drones coming from every direction? I mean, you're only talking a dozen miles off the coast of Iran, completely covered with cliffs and caves, mountainous, unbelievably torturous terrain all around it. And so forget that. That big island is called Keshem Island with a Q, and the other island that forms the toll booth is Larak. Kesem is bigger than Okinawa. It took the Marines 3 months to conquer, the Marines and the Army, five divisions to conquer Okinawa with extremely heavy casualties. That little island, Larak, is bigger than Iwo Jima. I want Lindsey Graham to be in the first boat. So these aren't going to happen. We can't even get our warships within, you know, hundreds of miles of there. They'd be blown out of the water. That's why I had that no-go zone on the other map. So forget number two. Another option would be North Oman. In that peninsula right at the opposite tip of the Strait of Hormuz is a little corner that is Oman territory, even though it's UAE around it. It's sort of like Alaska's not attached to Washington State, but it is what it is. So that's Oman territory. So some people have said, well, maybe the Marines will go there. Then they can have a base there, and then they can really screw with the Strait of Hormuz from that position. Fine. But they're still in total missile and drone range of 10,000 positions in Iran. So they would just be, you know, in undercover, trying to survive, not doing any missions. And Oman, we'd have to do it against the will of Oman, because if Oman does that, they become a co-belligerent. If they give us basing there, they become a co-belligerent. Already in the main part of Oman, if you jump back down to number seven, that's the U.S. Navy no-go zone. So you can see that little top of that peninsula is Oman, but the main part of Oman, over there right near that eastern point and below that, there are pipelines from Saudi Arabia that go across Oman. They've already been hit, like with very severe warning shots by Iran, where they have a pipeline across Oman going to a terminal, I think it's called Salalah, and the Iranians didn't obliterate it, but like what their mission a couple days ago against Qatar and Kuwait, they take out like 15%. It's like, we can do this all day. You know, you just lost 15% of your capability. Do you want to lose it all? Because we got plenty more drones where they came from. So all the way at that eastern tip of Oman and south is in easy Iranian range. So if anybody thinks, and please go back to the last one, the number one, the USMC landing zone. If you think that we're going to just have like Marines, like, oh, helicopters will be landing, C-130s, it'll be great. It'll be a massacre. It's too close. You know, there was a battle in Vietnam when the French were still in called Dien Bien Phu, where, oh, we've got this key place we can't lose. Let's parachute in the elite French Foreign Legion. They'll teach those Vietnamese a thing or two. That became an Alamo, and all the French were killed or taken prisoner. Elite French commandos, French Foreign Legion paratroops. Then in 1968, as part of the Tet Offensive, way up north in South Vietnam, in the northern part of South Vietnam, near the demilitarized zone, we had a big Marine fire base called Khe San. And for I forget if it was weeks, but I think months, it was just artillery shelled to hell and back by the North Vietnamese regulars. And we were like barely resupplying them. They did these amazing things. You can find videos. Couldn't land a C-130 on their airstrip. So they were resupplying it by something called a LAEP. It's a low altitude parachute extraction. So the C-130 goes flying down the runway, like 10 feet off the deck, and they push a cargo out, like food or ammunition, and a little drogue parachute extracts it, and it just goes flying down the runway, you know, ass over tea kettle, and then the Marines are supposed to run out and get their food or their ammunition. That's what so it's like preventing another Dien Bien Phu. And by the end of the Tet Offensive, you know, a ton of Marines died there, because it was like, well, we're keeping the flag. But after the Tet Offensive, they said, oh, we don't need that place anymore. So all you Marines that died there, It was for a symbol. And as soon as the Tet Offensive is over, the generals realize you can't defend that place, and they pull the Marines out. So it's like, so what did I die for? So dropping Marines onto one of these islands in the Strait of Hormuz to what? To like be a missile target, a missile magnet? It's totally insane. Or even that northern tip of Oman, opposite the Strait of Hormuz, just a missile magnet, a caisson. So what's left? All these Marines, they're going to have a mission. There's like not mission creep. It's like a mission necessity. And I'm going way back, but I can remember these are just exercises that we did, the big combined, joint and combined exercises. You've got the Air Force. You've got the Navy, Marines, foreign countries. Everybody wants their group to have a mission. The Rangers want to grab some bridge at Remagen. The Air Force wants to hit it with B-52s. You know, the SEALs want to swim up like it's bridge on the River Kwai and blow the bridge up with demo on the pillars. You know, everybody's trying to get a mission for that bridge. It's like at the planning level, the actual platoon commanders, they're like not even checkerboard pieces. You know, they're just things being moved around on a map. And it's sort of like a bureaucratic use it or lose it. You know, it's the end of the fiscal year. If we don't use all of our stuff, our budget will be decreased last year. So just go out and buy something. It's the same thing with special ops. If they fight the whole war with just air power, then what do we need the SEALs for? What do we need the Rangers for? What do we need the Green Berets for? So there's like a push to use all of these units. So I do think they're going to go on the ground. Trump is going to want to put an American flag on Iranian soil, and I'm not the only one to come up with it. Down there at number 4 in the corner is a city called Konarak, I'm probably mispronouncing it, and a port called Chabahar. And Chabahar is in Baluchistan, ethnic Baluchis territory. So the Baluchis are sort of like the Kurds on the Gulf of Oman, split between Pakistan and Iran. So there's already Baluchi independence movements. The CIA's been in there paying them, providing guns, things like that. So if we go into Chabahar, we probably will have maybe not a friendly reception, but it won't be a terrible reception, because it's not a place that's very popular. You know, the Tehran doesn't love the Baluchis that want independence. That doesn't mean it'll be easy, because God knows it's been mined. People are, you know, hidden. They know this is a target now. But the terrain is favorable. It's not as mountainous as the Persian Gulf. If you can switch to number 8, it's called 5 Things a Smart Person Would Never Do. If this shows what the Persian Gulf cliffs look like. Do you see that little red beach? Imagine you're the Marines and it's D-Day, and you've just somehow, the Tripoli and the Boxer got through the Persian Gulf, and somehow they managed to get their landing craft, you know, their landing amphibious tanks off, or their hovercraft, and you get onto that beach. Now what? It looks like the North Dakota Badlands. You know, it's a million steep ravines where the Iranians have had decades to dig in fighting positions. And you're going to just, what, rappel, you know, fire, it's like Kandahok, or in D-Day, you're going to fire ropes up that thing? Come on. The Persian Gulf is a no-go zone. So we're probably going, if we land, and I'm not, this is no secrets, what do I know? It's all open source. We'll probably land in southeast Iran, going back to number 1. And then we'll just have some Marines saying, we occupy a bit of Iran. Well, big deal. You know, who else can, you know, so what? When the British and the French, it was called the Entente, that was the allies in World War I, it was a similar situation. they needed to go through the Dardanelles Strait, which is between the Mediterranean and the Black Sea, another tight strait. First, they thought they could just rush through with battleships. It was heavily mined, so they had to first clear mines, which they thought they did, but the Turks could go out at night and lay more mines. So they went through with battleships, and they lost two British and one French battleships. More than 1,000 sailors killed. After that, they said, well, okay, we forget that. So that's like saying, forget the Strait of Hormuz. I think everybody in our military is smart enough to realize going through the Strait of Hormuz is the charge of the Light Brigade. It's suicidal. So what are they going to do? They're going to try to take a part of the coast that's fairly safe, plant the flag, and try to use that as a negotiating position. Tehran doesn't care. Tehran is a city of more than 10 million, and it's 700 miles north of the Strait of Hormuz. It's like, almost 1,000 miles from that place that we might put some Marines in. They don't care if we're there. And the Pakistanis are not going to be happy if we're supporting the same ethnic group that is, pulling in their mind terrorist ops like the Kurds in other parts, terrorist ops in Pakistan and Iran. So we're not going to be popular with the Iranians for supporting a breakaway group in one port in Iran. But I can say, I can definitely say, and if you can put back number one, that's the big Iran USMC landing site. I can see us holding that, thinking that we'll use that as a bargaining chip and we'll be able to expand outward from there. That the first Marines, they're not going to try to like take over the Strait of Hormuz. It'll be essentially similar to 1965 when I think 5,000 Marines landed at Da Nang in the middle of South Vietnam. And their mission at that time was just to secure the port and the airfield. That's it. But, there's an old saying, if you don't patrol it, you don't own it. So the security force at Da Nang Airport starts taking mortars and rockets, small rockets. Well, then you've got to patrol out. Well, what do you need to patrol out? More Marines. Within a year, there's like 180,000 American troops in Vietnam. By 1968, there's more than 500,000 Marines in Vietnam. And if you can put up number five, that's compares Iran to Vietnam. That shows the relative size of these things. So it's number five, the Iran map and Vietnam map. So Iran is 10 times bigger than South Vietnam. Now Vietnam is united, but the part we were interested in was South Vietnam, shown on this map. That's 1/10 the size of Iran. We couldn't control that with unlimited B-52 strikes. We called it arc light, carpet bombing. You've seen pictures of formations of B-52s. Total air supremacy, right? Nobody's shooting at the B-52s, not over South Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. Not up, 30,000-40,000 feet, wherever they are. Just pillaging out bombs that are, you can see the videos, crater, 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 planes in formation, practically wingtip to wingtip, just making death zones along the South Vietnam border. And who won that war? We didn't. We had to leave. We quit. Millions of Vietnamese died in that war. 58,000 Americans died. Millions of Vietnamese died in that war. And you know what happened? They didn't quit. We were there. They wanted us out. They were willing to die for it. Iran is 10 times as big as South Vietnam. Just the area shaded in red around the Strait of Hormuz and the coast of the Persian Gulf and Gulf of Oman, just that's bigger than South Vietnam. 500,000 American troops could not secure South Vietnam with total air power, unlimited B-52s. I mean, I think we had like 5,000 aircraft in Vietnam, from Hueys and Cobras up to B-52s. 5,000 aircraft roaming that country. You know what they did? They dug in. One of the things that they did, they built a tunnel system, which after the war, we knew there were tunnels during the war, but after the war, we were amazed that these tunnel systems were so complex and elaborate, but they were just little tunnels, like, you know, 6 foot high, 5 foot wide tunnels with large chambers that had like hospitals and barracks. The Iranians are not stupid. They invented chess. You've seen the videos that they have put out of tunnels that are, you know, 100 feet wide and 50 feet high with rows of missile launchers with ballistic missiles on them and rows of trucks that each have five of the Shahed drones on them. They've been planning that for this for decades. They're very smart. They know there's no point in trying to make an F-35 or an aircraft carrier. So they study us and say, what are our weaknesses? Well, I'll tell you, one of our weaknesses, we don't want casualties. And, you know, Lindsey Graham was talking over the weekend about, well, yeah, let's take one of those islands like Karg Island, showing he's an effing idiot. As I've already explained, Karg Island's not even in the discussion for military. It's 500 miles up the Persian Gulf where our destroyers won't go. And he's still talking about Karg Island. So he's retarded. Our policies are being driven by people that are absolutely stupid. So let's say we're going to take one of the small islands in the, you know, just a little Iwo Jima. He said, well, you know, we did do Iwo Jima. I'll put my money on the Marines. That would be a suicide mission. It would be like parachuting into the Alamo the day before they're massacred. An absolute slaughter. So if we go anywhere, it'll be on that Baluchistan coast down at the far southeastern corner. But that'll just make it a missile target, because the main thing that the Iranians want is to close with our troops. In the great book and movie, the book I think was called We Were Soldiers Once and Young by Colonel Moore. He became a general. That's 1965, the first big battle where American soldiers fought the North Vietnamese regulars. They were just out like looking for a fight, and they found it. Well, the Vietnamese strategy was, we want to hold you by the belt. What that means is, if we're so close that it's gunfight and hand-to-hand combat distance, you can't B-52 us because you'll be killing your own troops. We want to be close to your guys. And that's what the Iranians want. They want to be close to us. So any base that we throw up on Iran is going to be a missile magnet. And then what happens? Like Da Nang in Vietnam, well, we need to put some fire bases out there so that we can push that drone threat back. But the South Vietnamese didn't have ballistic missiles, hypersonics, Shahed drones by the hundreds. They didn't have any of that. But they did have a fighting spirit, and they never quit. I heard one, you know, my old SEAL mentors, they were all Vietnam veterans. They had great respect for the Viet Cong. The old SEALs, they spoke of the Viet Cong like, you know, they were a worthy adversary. They were not, you know, pushovers. They were there to fight, and they never quit. And the Iranians, who lost like between 500,000 and 1 million in the 1980 to 88 war, they feel like this is their opportunity. You know, this is their moment. America's got to come here now. And if, you know, and if Trump goes for this deadline and starts blowing up their electrical grid, or if Israel keeps doing it, they're going to lay waste to the Middle East. Millions will die of dehydration. If those desalinization plants are hit in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, they can't get out on airplanes before they'll be out of water. I mean, it's going to be a terrible, terrible show if this happens. Anyway, I'm hoping Alex will be back tomorrow, back in the saddle. and back in Mission Control. And it's been an honor to be on a couple times in the last few weeks. And we'll just all watch as this complete shit show unfolds. And, you know, in the meantime, yeah, you can buy my books. I wrote those books to kind of be a warning, but, you know, now here we are. And I think we'll be lucky in America to get out of this without a Great Depression, you know, not to mention the vulnerability of our own power grid. If we take out Iran's, they might have teams in this country to Metcalf enough of our power stations to turn out our lights. So, and this all came from Trump's sneak attack. Proud of it. You're talking to the Japanese prime minister, laughing about Pearl Harbor. Joking about Pearl Harbor. I mean, this is something you don't do. You're very cocky. You think you're going to win forever. The rest of the world's not happy with us right now, I'm telling you. They know who's causing this disaster. And it's the Israel-America combination. Yep. There we are. I'll see you later.
Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexshowstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexshowstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexshowstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexshowstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug that Irish Sea Moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, yeah, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.